Thank you. short clip, and from there we move to a broad presentation. Without that, it's very necessary that we start with this clip that gives context to the rest that we have that we go through. Thank you.
Thank you.
very much as well as for the quality of the sound. I will then move straight to the presentation. I am presenting from the document that is able to take the record. I'm on page 2 of the document, and it will not be sufficient. I do not copy the representation from the software with certain rights of that. As all our engagements with our services and our oversight committees, we ensure that we talk with the reputation team. As this is a project that was related to the field of South Africa and given the engagement on our audit services. The Auditor General of South Africa has a constitutional mandate and is a supplementary institution of South Africa. It exists to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through hosting thereby building public confidence. And I find it necessary that we have highlighted and enabling oversight because from the audit office, we are of the view that parliamentary structures and all the structures of governance are responsible for oversight monitoring in the public sector. The purpose of this presentation is to provide the members here with the necessary information on the role of the Auditor General of Africa to enable them to effectively fulfill the oversight function. We have the content. I'll be talking to the oversight role, the audit mandate and processes, the work that we as the audit office are doing, and the present process. What is here on slide number 6? It's a direct extract from the Treasury framework and guidance for preparation of strategic plans and budget processes. We request that the members familiarize themselves with this preparation guide from the Treasury. And I'll talk to how we fit as the audit office and then you as the oversight function are listening to this case. It is very simple. We prepare strategic plans on the basis of the strategic plans we are voted for. We make commitments that we have performance indicators, we spend these funds to deliver on these performance indicators. Throughout the year, they should be monitoring of the indicators, whether we are achieving them or not. At the end of the year, we compile an annual report that is to be audited. Look at it, we verify it whether whatever assessments are embodied in the annual performance report by management means these are actual performance achieved, are they indeed achieved, and can they be corroborated by auditable, verifiable documentation. That's how we did. But in the process of service delivery, we cannot wait till the end to look at the annual report and make a determination of whether this vote that was allocated to our department and VPT was it really used and intended purposes. Was anything hammering the process of achievement of these performance indicators that were approved on the annual performance plan and the strategic plan, and therefore whether management did indeed yielded the desired results. There has to be some form of monitoring so that corrective action can be taken. It is meant that we can plan and there can be other agencies that can happen or something that is completely not within the control of our agency and department that will necessitate that perhaps we revisit our annual performance plan and put in remedial action to make sure that whatever is impeding on the achievement of the performance indicator that we are finding can be addressed as a control deficiency and make sure that we put action of the plans of action to make sure that we achieve what we desire in the interest of the development. Even now that the strategic plan and the annual performance plan are reviewed by Treasury, they are looked by the executive authority, as national representative in parliament, we approve the audit. You don't audit the process. You act on the basis of information that is provided to you in good faith, and on the basis of this, we make decisions to approve the plan and make available to them. But from the audit office, we are saying we provide to a certain extent a reasonable assurance that because we don't audit 100%, we audit on a sample basis and we look at material issues whether information that is presented at the end in the annual report is it fairly credible, you can want to rely on it, and you know, are there any material misstatements in this and whether it can be acceptable or not. But we are saying then it should not be the role only of the audit office to be looking at that because audit is history. we look at different settings or maybe pass and come and say, are they correct or not? But in the interest of human delivery, we don't want that approach. We want that approach that will be proactive in making sure that something that impedes on human delivery is attended to immediately or it is actually taken. At the end of 12 months, we can say, yes, this is what we said. We promised a couple of South Africans, this is what we have delivered as principal care in development and business. So we ask that the committee members be active in reviewing the quarterly reports of the department against the annual performance plan and ensure that the department also controls in place to make sure that whatever that information is delivered is actually attended to, and then they should follow up feedback to the committee members. This is what we plan, these were the issues, the challenges that we as the department encountered, and this was the remedial action that we took, and this is how far we are with this department. For every quarter, because the annual report is basically for quarters. Every quarter, they make you constant feedback and interrogation of this quarterly report to make sure that at any given point, we are at a state where we can comfortably confirm on where we are in the national department as far as the delivery and achievement of performance indicators is concerned. In relation with the strategic plan, we need to review that to ensure that they are in line with the legislative requirements of JK. I'm talking to the management and daily legislation of the Department of Basic Education. Why does it exist? You know, whatever we have on the strategic plan of the department, that's the top of the mandate of the department, the enabling legislation. There shouldn't be this connection between the performance indicators of the department and the enabling legislation. That is what's happening. And it is within your efforts of committing them to engage the department and interrogate whatever they have on the strategic plan before they approve to ensure that you are comfortable that our performance indicators talk to the things of basic education and our performance indicators are indeed delivering the license delivery linked to the objectives of the basic education. We need to ensure that the strategic plan initiatives are aligned with the government priorities, the national development plan, and million times the initial agreement. We need to engage, and I spoke to this earlier, on the challenges in meeting the strategic objectives of the environment. And we need to advise in connection with the environment, conjunction with the environment and our policies, initiatives to address this. That implies that we need to talk in action of planning as a department, and it is within the committee's right to engage the department and say, these are the challenges. These challenges can come in the form of all this evidence, in the form of media or any other source that is reliable, that would be necessary, that we need to engage the department to make sure that what time the delivery is attended to. This action plan needs to monitor with the department, but it has to be realistic, and we need to set milestones to make sure that we project manage this process properly. And every time the department comes or as we see necessary, we need to get the department, call them in and say, now, these are the concerns that we had. How far are we? Where is the action then? Is the time bomb? Do we put in remedial actions that will suggest that these issues be attended to in an action that doesn't help anyone? We need to project manage it and make sure that we have proper, reliable, and realistic timeframes on which we will manage the processes. And we need to evaluate how the success will be measured. This implies that we need to have measurable performance indicators. If we have a performance indicator in the annual performance plan, it needs to be clear that the success of it, how will it be measured? We cannot be putting in performance indicators and we don't know how we'll be measuring success. And again, it is not the responsibility of the audit office to devise or to formulate these performance indicators. But as and when we look at it, we need to be comfortable that at the end of the day, when we report on our annual performance report, what is it that you'll be reporting on, and how we need to measure? And we also need to see what is the basis for the budget. Is the budget aligned with the strategic plan? The initial correlation. And our view as a audit office has been that we prepare the plan, and we say we need funds to execute the plan. Now, we cannot have differences in that. The whole thing needs to study, and we look at adequate resources allocated to priorities in our plan. It does not help to have an excellent plan and sufficient budget, but we don't have resources. Resources will not only apply to money, but we're talking to own bodies that need to be executing those plans that we have. And we need knowledgeable staff that is capable and competent enough to be dealing with our priorities. And I'm saying, I'm not suggesting that there are issues in basic education, but I'm saying in the right frame of things, this is how things should be working. Are there other constraints and how are they being dealt with? Focus on changes in the budget from year to another. So basically, it is very important to do the analytical recognition of the budget. You need to look at the change in spending, change in budgeting, where there is a significant amount of the vote that is not spent, we need to engage. And so what is the impact of that budget? And I'm not saying we need to be spending money for the purpose of spending it. There can be reasons that are not within the control of the department to spend these funds, but those reasons need to be auditable, they need to be genuine, they need, and it is the responsibility of the committee again to engage the department and ensure that there is issues. But most important, you cannot learn at the end that you want to spend your money. The spending trend needs to tell you during the end that will you need sufficient funds or you don't need sufficient funds. And you need to make the correlation on the expenditure versus achievements of the funds indicator. And I think we are not saying let us be cautious in spending and at the end we do this because I'm being push money out. So we need to say let us project manage our processes correctly and make sure that as and when we spend, there's a clear indication of what is the impact of service delivery on the percent that we are spending. It is necessary also to realize talking for the implementation and monitoring controls. And this is something that needs to be happening throughout the initial year, not only at the end of weather crisis. At any given point, you can engage the department to say, now, department, this is what you promised to deliver, how far are we? You don't need to wait for them to come say we are presenting our quarterly reports and what they are engaged. It simply doesn't get there. At any given point, when there's a need to engage the department on these issues, you can call the department and say, we are not comfortable with these concerns. Come and tell us where are we? And the department should be at any given point, if the internal controls are functioning, if the KPS issue, at any given point, they need to be able to respond to any form of questions towards the achievement of performance indicators, because this is what they do every day. On this point, is the spending department of spending in the right side and in line with the strategic priorities? Does management evaluate monthly and quarterly reports? If they do, ask for the results of this. What were the lessons learned? What were the challenges learned? What are we doing to manage the situation? Do action plans exist to address audit findings and improve financial management and accountability? And on this point, we're not only referring to audit findings in context of the audits that are done by the Auditor General of Africa. They have internal audits, they have some form of health investigations going on. Any form of interrogation of information that would constitute an audit needs to be presented and there needs to be accountability on the basis of the findings. And it is within our rights of course, needs to be able to be followed. We need to have combated that are designed, implemented, and maintained systems of internal control relevant to financial and non-financial information. Are the procedures in place to identify and detect fraud, which is not the responsibility of the audit management, should have internal control systems that will detect and prevent fraud. From the audit basis, if we haven't identified fraud, we will get by a chance that we don't go to audit with the objective of identifying fraud. That's not what we are supposed to be doing as an audit office. And we need to be comfortable that there are governance arrangements in place and they are there too. We're talking mainly through systems of governance, the internal audit and audit committee structure. And after the assessment of the effectiveness of the committee, because management needs to review their work internal audit and of the audit committee to make sure that there is value derived from this governance structure. And at any given point, you need to be comfortable that the department can respond to you convincingly, probably documentation that can be reviewed yet. These governance structures are really effective. The department and these entities need to be accountable for the use of resources and the data. In closing, we need to keep management accountable and determine whether the compliance with the reporting responsibilities that set out in the TNA. We're talking to necessary laws and regulations and compliance with Parliament's Appropriation Act. Effective and efficient utilization of resources. We need to hold them accountable. At any given point, because they are trusted in these offices to make sure that we spend the government money responsibly, therefore, there needs to be accountability at the very highest level in these institutions. In consideration of non-financial information, we need to reconcile the annual report with the annual performance plan and confirm that all plan objectives are reported upon. There shouldn't be omissions. We shouldn't see a change in government whereby when performance indicators are not achieved, that will be getting the annual performance report. That should be there. Every indicator that was formulated and there was a promise that we don't get accepted. Even if it's not achieved, we need to make sure that we report upon it and indicate the reasons why we haven't achieved it.
It will also be that
we said that we talk to the combined assurance model in government, which is the threshold looking at the management assurance, oversight assurance, and independent assurance at level of assurance. And from the audit office, we have it laid this way in a sense and context that we engage daily with management. They are responsible for the operations, accounting officers, and the executive authority, you know, the eyes of the routine business decision. They are daily executing their operations. And there needs to be some form of assurance on the information that is provided by them. To say, yes, we put an assertion forward, the information that we produce is accurate, credible, reliable, which is data, replicable, corroborating documentation. The oversight structures are not there doing the work with the department, but to a certain extent, it is expected that these structures of governance, the second level of assurance, are structures of governance focusing on monitoring and compliance, risk assessment, implementation of recommendations will go short, and action plans to strengthen the control environment within our departments and agencies. And we are saying, if these governance structures function effectively as they should, provide some form of assurance to say, we have looked at the capabilities of information that is provided by management, and we have interrogated it, we received consistent responses, we interrogated the documentation that they provided, and we are comfortable that we can provide some form of assurance. We then obviously the jurisdiction of a specific level of assurance. Now we have the third one, independent assurance, that level of assurance, and this is where portfolio committees and public accounts committees are sitting. And A is where we expect the extensive level of assurance. There we are saying, we need continuous monitoring of efforts to address internal control deficiencies. This is where the portfolio committees come in, to engage its departments to say, from any source of information that is reliable that you receive, the issues that you identify, what has happened to them, what actions of plan were put in place, and are we convinced that those actions of plan will yield the desired results. There should be continuous overhead monitoring of any information being necessary relating to the operations of the department and its entities. And this is where the Public Accounts Committee comes to play as well. And we are saying, if you look at the entire assurance model, if everything functions effectively as it should function, we shouldn't be sitting at a situation where at the end we are in the result of the audit, there was dependency on the audit about the material assessment to be affected with the financial statements, the annual performance report, to get them acceptable level. Because the trend has been that if you look at the number of audit outcomes, as a result of the audit effort, that financial statements are at least an acceptable level in terms of corrections that have to be taken. But again, indicated that we work on a sample basis. If I miss it, it's not taken. But we are saying processes need to be taken to make sure that these things are not happening. And these assurance models are intended to address such anomalies. Our contribution to oversight. We provide briefings to the committees on audit reports before portfolio committees compile the IFRS report with the annual report. Update on focus of current year audit, sharing of audit risks and status of priority controls. Before the annual performance plans are approved, it should be reviewed by the portfolio committee to discuss the findings identified from the priority auditing of the pre-summit objectives, that is performance information of the department. What we have done as the audit office, we thought, let us rather be prospective, because audit services need to provide value for those that exist. We thought that it is ideal that we engage with the annual performance plan as early as before they are approved, to identify shortcomings or deficiencies in the planning processes, the formulation of the strategic plans, because we can only audit the best provided, but we cannot dictate how these performance indicators need to be formulated. But before these ADPs are approved, we look at them, we advise the department on the deficiency that we identify and say, we recommend, we cannot enforce, we recommend that you accept these corrections to the ADP, and we give them reasons why we suggest that corrections need to be effective. And if they listen to us and decided that we have a strong point, like it happened with basic education in the previous day. They would go and adjust their other performance plans accordingly, and we didn't have problems with the annual performance plan. When we talk to the process of annual performance plans and annual performance report auditing based on the stage, but the element that I just spoke to is talk to the to the usefulness of the annual performance indicators are to it later, but in the process it will make sense why we do that predictive auditing.
We look so opportunity in the general report. We as a audit office engage all our stakeholders in the process of auditing the parliamentary committees, legislature, briefing them on the audit outcomes consolidated, either being certainly will be all indicators that are NFMA legislated, or NFMA will be those that are all NFMA legislated. On PLA, it will be departments and target entities, and NFMA will be all entities falling under the MFA NFMA Act. We should regularly follow up on progress of implementation of resolutions, interactions with chairpersons, possibly quarterly, or said when it arises. And assist in building capacity of members via the ATAC. We then move to the audit mandate and processes. Like any other institution, we are governed by law. We are a Chapter 9 institution formulated in terms of the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa of 1996. Section 188 is very clear on the way that the auditor general is to be doing. We need to audit and report on accounts, financial statements, and financial management of government institutions, and report to Parliament or legislation that has that interest in the report. The Public Audit Act also empowers the work that the auditor general is doing. Section 20 there is clear that we need to prepare audit reports that contain conclusions and opinions on financial statements and financial position, compliance with financial management, and our conclusions on performance information and retirement objectives. The paper is very specific on Section 40 on the responsibility of accounting officer. We have facultating responsibility by accounting officer in preparation of financial statements for audit, submission of financial statements for audit to the auditor general on the 81st of May every year, and we need to be looking at these as and when they are presented to us. In addition to what has been prescribed in Section 4 of the Public Audit Act, and subject to any legislation that the Auditor General may audit and report on the account, financial statements, and financial management of institutions, every entity or organ estate that is funded from the National Revenue Fund, Provincial Revenue Fund, or Municipal Fund, or any institution authorized by the legislation to receive funds from the government, the Auditor General can go and audit that. It is by law. If money comes from the government, you can engage and say there is a need to audit, and the law allows it. We would want to see a public sector that has professionalism, which is core at the center of everything that is happening in public sector. In so saying, we are talking to public sector which has robust financial and performance management systems. We are talking to public sector where there is good oversight and accountability. Public sector which is committed and has been created by all public sectors demonstrated. And of course, the Auditor General that is competent and very willing in providing audit services. And all these that we do, and our aspirations on this, are in the interest of creating a better, dignified life for the citizens of our country through timely, effective, and efficient and economic service delivery. And we have 10 points that talk to everyone that we aspire to see with the public service. We are accountable to the National Assembly and have to report on our activities and performance or functions in terms of Section 10 of the Public Bodies Act. Our main accountability instruments are the audit, participants, as well as the annual report, all of which are tabled annually in the National Assembly. The same curriculum the Auditor General scored established in terms of Section 10 of the Public Audit Act oversees the performance of the audit office on behalf of the National Assembly, like any other department or organ of state where they have parliamentary committees that oversees the roles and responsibilities of those organs of state. So we are subject to the same laws as the audit office. From the audit office, we go into extra medicine. We provide the oversight committee in Parliament and all legislators with briefings on root causes and recommendations on corrective measures to improve audit outcomes before the NCT hearings. Developing a required leadership competency through mentoring, coaching and leadership programs and processes for effectively managing change. We invest in our staff to make sure that they produce work of good quality. We consult closely with our stakeholders in legislation and legislation, particularly in general reports that consolidate the audit outcomes of national and provincial governance and municipalities. And our report is tabled in Parliament in legislation. That's how it's generally are. The work that we do is necessary that we also talk to the product that we produce at the audit office. The mandatory one is the regulatory audit, where we verify that there is no omitted information on the financial statements, looking all at financial matters compliant, predetermined objectives, and the fundamentals of internal control. There we talk into leadership, financial and performance management, and governance issues. And in executing our responsibilities, we comply with the international standard of auditing, we call them the ISA, to make sure that our audit work can stand any test. It is reliable and it is done within the parameters of the standards that govern the principles of auditing. Supporting regulatory audit, which is another critical element of audit, is the information systems auditing. All the information that we audit is produced from the system. We have the transversal systems for departments, you have the bus, you have systems that can produce performance information depending on how mature the department is. And because all this information comes from the system, we need to be looking at the systems and the controls around the systems to make sure that they are of such that there is no suggestion that there is probably tampering with the system and to what extent the information generated by the system can be relied upon. On the space of the information systems audit, we look at general controls auditing around the computer, access to the computer, and the processing and application controls. And this information is very vital in assisting our regulatory audit processes in the risk assessment, looking at the risks that need to respond to throughout audit by regulatory audit processes. We also have other audits that we do that are discretionary, that are not mandated. Performance audits, investigations, and special audits. And these performance audits are mandatory in terms of Section 23 of the Public Audit Act, where we evaluate the measures to ensure that economic procurement and resources of economic procurement of resources and efficient and effective application of resources is set. Effective of policy implementation, reporting is special and does not include audit opinion there, so we report on special steps. We do not want to give you an opinion to say things are really stated or not. So what we report on performance audit are better that way, that other parts of audit process and these steps have been agreed to and confirmed with management. And this audit normally takes a little bit long because the extent and scope of work is more intensive when compared to the audit. But there normally, by the time the performance audit report is tabled, everyone in management has agreed to the fact and we are all comfortable that the facts are accurate. We have investigations also that are not compulsory, that are discretionary, and it's an independent process to prevent or detect fraud or crime in public sector. and specific focus areas of financial misconduct or maladministration in impropriety. So basically throughout all these processes, if there's flex and risk that identifies that that would suggest that something could be wrong in the audit process or in the way that management is carrying out this responsibility. We as an audit office counsel, we need to zoom into it and perform an audit that is slightly deviating from the normal director audit, zooming into what we see as a red flag. Discretionary audits are more of audits that are of based upon social nature, where as an example, there's a donor fund that a donor would request that the Supreme Audit Institution look at the terms in which the funds, the donated funds were used, and we issue the CCK cleaners. We have agreed with you to execute these procedures, and this is how the funds were used, and we don't issue an opinion on such audit. Performance audit, we look at the payment strategies, the economy, the efficient and effective utilization of resources. There should be value for money and that is delivered for each spend. That's it to performance audit. You do no other thing, you can express in a conclusion the special findings are based on the strategies. Economic utilization of the resources, the efficiency thereof, and the effectiveness. And the special findings are presented in the form of a report. We start not at any conclusion, and the risk reports are also tabled in Parliament, and you can draw your own conclusions from the special findings reported. What we do not do as a regularity audit, we don't provide assurance that all of the tabled laws and regulations have been complied with. We cannot do that. It is not our responsibility to identify fraud. If you are aware of fraud, you cannot say where were the audits. We don't go to audit with the objective of identifying fraud. But if there's an indication of fraud, we consider it and we respond appropriately to measures of fraud. We would take fraud seriously. But it is not the primary objective of auditing to identify fraud. If I present audit outcomes and they don't talk to fraud and we are aware of fraud, I cannot be held accountable to say you are supposed to pay fraud. We don't audit 100%, like I said, we audit on a sample basis. It can happen that it is not within the sample that I picked. If we are well with it. But if you are aware of fraud, you can pay it to our attention. If I'm not aware of it, I will consider it. Again, when we audit retirement objectives, we cannot provide assurance that service delivery has been achieved. And what are the impact of it? We simply can't do that. But what we can do and what we do, every assertion made by management suggesting that actual performance has been achieved of the performance indicators, we verify that against corroborating documentation to test whether it's valid, complete, and accurate. If we said you will deliver 10, I will look for documentation suggesting that we deliver 10, but I will not make a conclusion for the service delivery was achieved. It just doesn't make sense. But what we do as a audit office, we can provide assurance that financial statements are free from material misstatements, and we are very careful in the words we use. We said material misstatements because we don't audit everything. We audit material balances for financial statements on a sample basis. If I was to audit everything, that would imply that probably audit services will not be affordable, and I need to stay at the department permanently and look at every transaction that is being processed. We have governance structures in the department, with audit committees, with internal audits, management that needs to be assuring that they provided that form of assurance to make sure that every transaction that goes through is correctly accounted for correctly and it was intended service delivery. But at the end, I look at the financial statements, I look at the financial statements, the annual performance report, and material items, I will look at them. Hence, we are very careful in saying material misstatement. If there's a misstatement and it's not material, I might have missed it. By hence, it might be part of example, then I will consider it. We report on the usefulness and reliability of performance information in the annual performance report. Usefulness, we're talking to any aspect of the annual performance plan, strategic plan. Reliability and usefulness, the famous way that you can relate to usefulness is the SMART criteria, because all that talks to the formulation of performance indicators. But reliability, we're talking three aspects. The information that we're reporting is very accurate and complete. That's how we assess the reliability in audit space. If I cannot satisfy myself with those three assertions, then we have a proven. That implies that information that is provided to corroborate actual performance reported as a kid. I'm not hearing it. And we raise all these findings and suggest to management that perhaps consider adjusting this. It is not even a fair and true reflection of the paper process. Report on the criminal non-compliance with laws and regulations. I indicated when we spoke to the mandate of the office that we're looking at the next step, compliance of financial statements, the presentation of financial statements, compliance with laws and regulations and performance information. So we cannot ignore compliance with laws and regulations. But again, we don't audit all laws and regulations. It's just not practical. But the PSME and all key legislation, we do look at I'm from Treasury talking to supply chain management processes, which is a big thing in government. Those with business, all he wants to make sure that we have the audit to the audit. And we also identify key internal control deficiencies that need to be addressed. And these talk to the very fundamentals of internal control that I spoke to. And the fact that the audit findings that are reported to management implies that there are deficiencies in the existence of internal control that need to be attended to. And we have to bring it to the management attention, even on the audit report. If an audit report has findings, then there's material assessment to the financial statements. Normally, towards the end of the audit report, you will see a paragraph of what internal control suggesting that what went wrong, and this is our view as the audit office, on the leadership, control and performance management, and everything is driven by time and the fact that determines what needs to be done and where it needs to be taken. Our year end for departments in different days is 31st March. By 31st May, departments and entities from the FMA is to submit the financial statements to the audit office for auditing 2 months after that, the 31st of July. We need to produce audit reports to our departments and entities. We also have quarterly reports, which are not, of which the time frames are not legislated by law by the FMA. These are initiatives from the Auditor General where we look at all key departments, big departments, in concurrent functions, most of them, and we say, okay, now what are the common issues within this particular sector, and we produce a report on the key focus areas within that sector. And what we normally try to do to make sure that our findings within the sector are still relevant and we afford management enough time to apply our minds and address deficiencies that concern the sector, we try to make sure that probably it was the last one of the financial year, we issue a report and say, these were the key focus areas within this sector, these are the findings, attend to these findings, because in the sector report we also have audit recommendations and we say address these issues to make sure that they don't attend the following year. And in most cases we talk to the root causes and we don't only talk to the findings and say address the findings, say these are the root causes for these findings that we have, address those root causes in the interest of service delivery to make sure that these findings does not recur and impede service delivery in the following year. So we try to manage it in such a way that management have also in our time. But in addition to this, most of these findings are raised during the regularity audit process. Anyway, management then, as and when the findings are raised during the year, have an opportunity to engage with the auditor, and by the time we produce the sector report, it will not be for the first time that we see those findings. The sector report is just a consolidation basically of all the findings on the key focus areas put together in one report for the whole company. As a sector, we have the challenge. Leadership of education as a whole address and attend to this in one report. And this report we normally table to the portfolio committee as well. Audit of financial statements and specific focus areas. The audit of financial statements is mandated and it is required in terms of the Constitution and the Public Audit Act. We form an opinion on whether financial statements are prepared in all material respects in accordance with the applicable financial reporting framework. This is the base for everything. Entities and departments, as and when they prepare financial statements, they prepare this in accordance with the framework that is issued to them by Treasury. They don't just go and present financial statements as and when they place in a formulary that they want to present them. Anyone can prepare financial statements in any way they can understand them. But if financial statements are truly understandable and if so doing, we need to be consistent on how we prepare financial statements. That's the framework on treasury basics. When you prepare financial statements of the department, this is the framework that you need to follow. And all government departments' financial statements will be in the same layout and same framework. All public entities will be in the same layout and framework to make sure that we are consistent. And as and when we audit, we make sure that they do not deviate from that framework. Because again, we are aware that after all audits are signed off, we prepare an audit on the consolidation where all financial statements of government are consolidated together. Now, if we prepare financial statements in any format you want, you can imagine how hectic the consolidation process would be. So we had a base to say, this is what is expected when preparing financial statements and everyone calls the same rules. And we audit on the base of that instruction from Treasury. And if the situation, we raise audit findings, we raise management to say, you have not complied. And that, in most cases, would constitute material adjustments to the financial statements.
Critical objectives. Specifically, about the issues of focus on the reliability and usefulness of performance information to include measurement of targets that start out in the beginning of the financial year when we look at the annual performance plan of within the financial year and then determine whether they were actually achieved.
There's nothing wrong with not achieving a performance indicator. Only if you disclose the need and you're transparent to say, I planned for this performance indicator, but I did not achieve it. And these are the reasons why I could not achieve it. There's nothing wrong doing that. It can happen. You can plan for something and it doesn't materialize. But the reasons must be authentic, they must be auditable, they should be backed up with corroborating information. You cannot put the reason as a department or entity and say, I couldn't achieve A easily that was planned, and there's no reason. Or verifiable documentation why these things can't be or couldn't be achieved. And when we audit, we don't omit it. We make sure that those communicators which are not achieved, there's corroborative documentation. And we audit it to make sure that the reasons are valid because the annual performance report, the annual report becomes a public document now. When we sign a claim, we audit it. We need to make sure that all information that is presented to the users, we can come up with the audit of it, sign up on it and say, yes, we do things and these risks again.
Compliance with laws and regulations is another element that I spoke to. We cannot omit it. We need to make sure that reporting on material non-compliance with key legislation is brought to the user's attention. To make sure that when you look at the annual financial statement and the annual report of the department, you are made aware that these pieces of legislation which are key will not comply with.
I spoke to the factor report. And on the factor report, we can't audit everything in education. So what we normally do is select key focus areas that we look at annually, and we report on those. What it would be is that a transversal and the implementation takes place at all provinces. As an example, in the 2018 year, we looked at infrastructure, we looked at ASCII from the National Department, and we looked at the Education Infrastructure Grant, which takes place at provinces. We looked at the Learner Transport Scheme, we looked at the Learner Teacher Support Material, the use of textbooks, and the workbook provided by the National Department. We looked at the adult literacy, the Calicutta project, and we also looked at the adult education and training, the one residing in the Department of Higher Education and Training, and we looked at the teacher professional development. All these, the implementation is at the provinces. Now, when we put a sector report together, we report on the control deficiencies collectively from all provinces, including the National Department. So we are looking at 9 provinces and the National Department, depending on entities. We are currently working on the process of finalizing our sector report, and when it is ready, before we table it, we come and engage the committee. So these are the focus areas that we looked at on the sector report, and these are the findings so that when the report is tabled, we are familiar with the contents of the report. With your permission, I will also leave the committee with the homework. And very simple. I request for you, Chair, that the committee give input on the focus areas for the education sector. When we table the education sector, we don't want to make the sector report the education sector report. We are looking at education collective. Now I'm speaking to the basic education portfolio committee. We will be having engagement with our higher education portfolio committee, where the same message will be conveyed to them and say, what is it that is of concern to you? What should we focus on the sector report? But that will be coming here for the next year. And we will make follow up with the office of the chairperson to get input on the focus areas that you deem necessary and see that the way office can look at in the 14-15 year. But for the 14-15 year, we looked at these six key focus areas. Good administration. How do we define it? And this is in audit context. Clean audit. What is a clean audit and is it achievable? The answer is simple. It's those entities that are achieving clean audit outcomes. Entities I'm not only referring to public entities, even some government departments that are doing so well that there isn't material attraction towards the financial statement and annual performance report, and they observe all those in execution of that business. The way we as audit office define this, we are talking of financially unqualified financial statements that are free from material misstatement. Nothing that the auditor says, you know, if this financial statement, if it wasn't for the audit report, this would have gone wrong. It's nothing like that. The material, no material findings relating to compliance with laws and regulations, they observe all the laws, including procurement laws in execution of their responsibilities, and there are no material findings and assessments to performance information. We do have these entities. And we encourage that all our entities in government strive towards these clean audit outcomes. Yes, there are challenges, but we can see that there is a slow shift towards the right direction, but we are not yet where we want our sector education to be. But let us continue encouraging them. And with our oversight, you can play a very vital role in ensuring that you monitor them, you are on their cases. They will feel this pressure that everyone needs to pull their weight towards clean administration in government. And this is not something that we talk to in basic education space only, but in government in totality. Our million apps told us and defined these audit opinions. I don't want to go much into this audit opinion, but just to recap, unqualified and unmodified, we are saying the auditor is comfortable and you don't have to be concerned that, look, this financial statement is a true picture and fair view of the state of affairs of a particular entity, and the financial statements have been in compliance with the applicable reporting framework. In addition to the unqualified opinion, you can have unmodified emphasis of matter or other matters where we are bringing to the user's attention that this is not this financial statement unqualified. There were concerns. That would suggest that these are not clean audit outcomes. Once I start saying you are unqualified, but there were other issues, it implies that probably if it was not for the audit effort, things would have gone wrong. But again, the value of auditing is to assist and work the journey with our auditors to make sure that we assist them with our capabilities and experience to make sure that we try to clean up our administration and government as far as we can. We have the qualified ones where the issues are not so capacity and said yet to suggest that the financial statements are not good at all. There were cases where here and there things didn't go as much as one would have intended, but unfortunately, even though we issued the recommendations, they still could not remedy the situation, and we unfortunately have to regret issuing different opinions. With a disclaimer, the hope sufficient that appropriate evidence to express an opinion, if one is throwing hands in the air, things that make sense, the documentation are not available, then we have the view that, look, it doesn't help auditing the financial statement. Let us go and address our internal control deficiencies. We'll try again in the following year. The adverse opinion is a total no, we disagree. I respect us and we have to say, I disagree. The assertions we are making in the financial statements and annual performance reports are misrepresenting. This is not the true data of our statement, and we disagree. On our auditor, predetermined objectives, we said three things. Compliance with the regulatory requirements, because in our country, everything is written by law. There are reasons why we need anything. And in so doing, we need to have timelines on which certain things need to be done so that we can project managing everything that we do. We move forward and we know the timelines on which certain things need to be achieved. On compliance with regulatory requirements, we look at. On compliance with the data requirements, we look at the existence of the strategic plans and the annual performance plan. It is very clear in terms of the Public Finance Management Act and guidance and treasury that these things need to be there. And the time being thereof, by when these things need to be prepared. We look at that process, the entire process of planning, to make sure that do we do them and do we adhere to the deadlines that they are issued by treasury. On the usefulness, we look at the presentation measurability, relevance and consistency in formulation of our performance indicators. Reliability, I spoke to the three assertions. If I can't satisfy any of these, then we have a problem. And on performance information, we are still at a point where we do not express a conclusion by an opinion in the audit report. But what we do, we indicate in the management report what the opinion would have been if we had expressed that in the audit report. We started with performance information about 5 or 6 years ago, and it has been a phased-in approach where we take our entities by hand and say, look, these are the requirements of the law in terms of performance information and predetermined objectives. This is how the requirements for reporting. Let us make sure that by the time the audit office decides that we express an opinion on performance information, we are at a stage there, our client is ready, and our entities are comfortable that they have measured to an extent that they can stand the test of this in public. We produce audit reports, and it is also important that we talk to the staff of the audit report, what is expected to be seen in the audit report. It has different phases, categories, if we measure so also. The first section of the audit report talks to the report on financial statements. The first paragraph is the introduction to the audit report. We have the accounting officers or accounting officers should be for the finance accounting authority to be for public entities, responsibilities to the financial statement. We make it very clear, and also before we commence with the audit, we issue an audit engagement letter to our entities, where we also have the same accounting officers and accounting authorities responsibilities set out upfront saying, we as an audit office don't take accountability for the financial statements. It is your product. Our job is to audit them. And if the findings were risk findings, to make sure that there are no material misstatements, and if you can, correct those findings. So that it is clear, there's no mix-up of responsibilities as and when we go away. We also have our ultra general responsibilities when we say, yes, now that you know what is expected of you, this is what is expected of us as the audit office. And once that has been clear and understood, the next paragraph would be the opinion, which can either attest and qualify disclaim or assess. It can be rather simple, those four. Depending on the circumstances, on whether it was dependent on the audit record, we can have emphasis of matter and additional matters as a subsequent paragraph to the audit opinion. And once we see additional matter paragraph, as we call it, that clearly tells you that if it wasn't for the audit effort, things could have gone wrong. The next section of the audit report is a report on other legal and regulatory requirements where we look at predetermined objectives and compliance with laws and regulations. Depending if there are critical findings, we will report the findings in the audit report, but we will not tell on the audit report what the conclusion will have been. I will not say the department would have received a disclaimer from this information. But the innocent report will show that. But the fact that you see findings reported in the audit report, it means there was a transfer from the audit side, look, we were not taking any of the findings. So it is the committee's responsibility to analyze any data that the audit is. What we imply at those findings and what gave rise to those findings, so we can have a context to where we are coming from. And on the basis of the context that you see, you can make your own determination. And you will realize that it's very significant and it warranted reporting in the audit report. Because there's funding that we report, it means something went wrong on the three fundamentals of internal control, leadership, financial performance, management, and governance. And based on our assessment of what went wrong and where it went wrong, we will, if it's an issue of leadership, taking tools from the top, we will write an arranged paragraph talking to aspects of leadership. And this is what went wrong in leadership, hence there were these findings that the accounting system of internal control. The same applies to financial performance management and governance. In most cases, governance would be talking to the effectiveness of internal committees and internal audit. Because that's supposed to be their governance process to make sure that there are no findings. They need to be reviewing these financial statements and performance reports before we review them and give management a certain level of assurance to say, yes, you are on the right track, we look at them. But again, management is banking on this governance process to do what they're supposed to be doing. They need to know that they have right people that are capable of producing information that's credible. But because we assume things can be, but they shouldn't be dependent on the audit record to raise these issues. And if there's other audits that we've done or other reports, again, maybe investigations, performance audit, or ask the account procedures. On audit report, that will be the last section saying there was this other investigation that happened, this is how bad the state is of that particular investigation. We will not give factual findings of that. We will just inform the user to know that there was some form of an investigation or audit taking place other than regularity audit. And if you want to engage on that, you need to then request that information to the department and say, which has not indicated that there was this happening in the department, what are the results, can you engage with that report if it is for another? Why do we draw the user's attention to certain aspects in the financial statement? There we are trying to unpack and distinguish between emphasis of meta and additional meta paragraphs, because in most cases, there tend to be confusion and the two are used interchangeably, so we are not unpacking them. If there's going concern issues, I need to bring it to the user's attention to say, look, even though these theft financial statements are not qualified, but no way you see them that the challenge is related to going concern, internal control weaknesses, the system of internal control is not functioning effectively as desired, the financial management deficiencies, non-compliance with applicable laws and regulations, fraud or suspected fraud taking place at our entities. Now we bring that to the user's attention to say, when you look at this financial statement on the annual report of the entity as a whole, know that there are these other issues that are not explicit. And we bring it to our attention that when you engage them and ask the right question and tell them the auditor's report makes an assertion that these are on what is going on, we want responses. If you are attending to these things, can we send action plan to address these things to remedy the situation? And are there milestones? When are the deadlines to make sure that these issues are achieved and monitor the action plan going forward? But the distinction between the two, additional methods and emphasis of method. With emphasis of method, I can only emphasize what is already disclosed in the financial statement. So I will say as reported in paragraph so and so, or in this note to the financial statement, when you read the financial statement, look at that particular note, if it's problematic or we are not comfortable, or maybe when you compare the financial statements of the current year to the prior, the comparable amounts are not the same, know that certain balances were stated. So it can be something that is already disclosed in the financial statement. With the additional method, it doesn't need to be disclosed in the financial statement. I can bring it from anywhere. If I have a right source of information that I see is necessary, that the users of the annual report need to be formed of this, I will bring it in and disclose it in the financial statement. So that's the only difference between the additional meta and the emphasis of meta. Emphasis of meta, I need reference to what is disclosed in additional meta. There's no need to disclose it, but I can bring it in as what is at my discretion and will say, I'm concerned with this issue.
we then move to the briefing process. Because we are accountable to Parliament, everything that we do, we need to come and work as an organ of state, so we subject to them. We need to engage with all structures of Parliament, all oversight committees, all our stakeholders on the work that we do. The audit report, the performance report, will come and begin. So that when the department comes and tables the report, you have context to the challenges that these entities were facing. There was a breakdown in the system of internal control, our report will specify that and will come and give context to you again. At any given point where you need clarity on any work that is within our scope of work, if you need clarity on any work that we did to the department, call us in, we can get clarity if we audited it. If we haven't audited it, we will be transparent and say, look, that was not the scope of audit, we will consider it. And if time allows, and depending on the agency of that from the committee, we can visit it in our agency of the now. On a particular date, we need to report to the committee on this and how we agree to it when the date comes and come and report to it. We prepare briefing notes that we will hand out so that as and when we engage these entities, you can make reference to what went wrong. And then it's within your eyes to press this briefing note so that you keep the message notes so that when you engage them, we can make a reference. We also look at the accounting officers and audit committee's report. The audit committee is one of the important elements of governance structure that works very closely with the audit. There can be differences of opinions between the audit committee and the external auditors, which is not ideal, but in most cases, and particularly in context of the education, basic education, we haven't got to the point where we say we agree with the audit committee. In all the reports that they compare with the audit conclusion, and we have numerous meetings with them. Whenever there's challenges, we engage the audit committee to say, look, these are the challenges. If the action is not put together urgently to remedy the situation, these are the possible audit outcomes. And I must say, in context of basic education, the audit committee has been very useful mechanism to make sure that the environment is moving forward and improving the audit outcomes. We looked at the ENTs as well, the Estimates of National Expenditure, and the budgeting processes of the environment. And we look at the state of the nation at the address and see how it affects the department. And the issues of concern, we raise it with management. Well, it is decent that we afford management to respond before we have engaged our overhead structure. By the time we engage you, it means that we already engage with the department. Well, we are great organizers, but the bottom line is that they would have been informed what the body challenges are with particular processes that they have. And the next slide talks basically to the briefing processes. I will not go much into the slide, but we talk mainly to reporting by departments and entities, understanding what the mandate of the entities and oversight structures, the actual briefing process, that's what I spoke to now, recommendations by the oversight committees, because the information that comes to our attention, you need to make recommendations to them. It doesn't have to say, yes, there are these challenges and you don't need recommendations. You also need to give recommendations to them what you think should bring to the situation and they need to act on that. And action on that implies that they are going to develop an action plan to attend the recommendations of this committee and you monitor that. The next time the department appears before you, the first question will ask how we are with our recommendations and it's going to trouble evidence. And if the committee doesn't have time to audit that, you can also put the services of the Office of the Auditor General to say this is what we told the department to do. Can we really confirm whether these responses from the department are actually authentic? Can we take reliance on them? Is the information credible? And these monitoring plans are good tools to provide assurance to this committee that we have done what is reasonably in our mandate as a committee to make sure that we assist the department and we do the change with them towards the KVC department. Chair, that summarizes our presentation and the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
I'm
not actually continuing. I'm realizing that this was supposed to be on the television that we had so that we can get enough time to interact with it. I wish you could verify again, I'm sure for the Journal of Human Rights, I can see that you say. So the thing will happen from the street to the presentation. Any questions from them to the attention of the lecturers? I know even point of clarity, because it will be important that you understand the terms of human forward in your trip to the place will be engaging. So let no change for those numbers in the Okay, let me just. Okay. I feel it's just one of the in that order, please. Can I start with you, Honorable?
Okay, thank you, and thanks to the AG's office for the presentation. I think we often need to be reminded of these matters. I'm very fortunate that I served on a SCOPA for 3.5 years and APAC and so on, but that made me even more glum than what I am, so it's the truth. But something I would like to say is on your slide 26, where you spoke about the education sector order, I recall that we once had a presentation, and I'm sure it was from the national office, your national office, on infrastructure, and when you spoke about value, it also went so far as being explained to us that, say, for example, we built a school or a college, whatever, that was there that need. And the value came to a person that, if I understood it correctly, that, in fact, did we pay the right price for the building material, for example, was expected being their job from a municipal side point of view, because they aren't, and I think that was a big challenge even for the auditor's office, is that many of the municipalities in provinces don't even have building inspectors anymore, and that's why we often get that school buildings aren't built appropriately, and afterwards the Department of Public Works, whoever they own, are sit with major problems. Maybe just a little bit on that, if that's still an ongoing thing, because I think that's crucial on spending and getting the little money. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank
you very much.
As my colleague said, our Rod Blonde finances is in high. I don't know what slide this is, the strategic planning. Is the strategic plan in line with the legislative requirements? What I would like to know, if it is not in line with your requirements, what corrective actions do you put in place just to ensure that? And then the second page after that one, have adequate resources been allocated to priority areas? Sometimes you find that budget, it's been budgeted for a certain vote and then money is shifted around. Do they have to pass this through the Auditor General's office, or can they do it without your input? Chair, thank you very much. Let's just see here. Okay, and then the AGSA mandate and legislative requirements. To do a Section 14 and so forth, you find that many accountable officers are not on par with what is required of them. And this leads to mismanagement. What do you do in that instance? What are the steps that are followed? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honourable Lavinon.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, well, I'm asking questions that I need to ask. They might be a bit obtuse. In the past, you have found that the Department of Basic Education for the last 2 years, I can't remember the exact percentages, but has, as most departments, has not met all its targets. And some of its targets were set such that they actually couldn't be measured. So there were various comments made about the targets. But one of the results of that is that, for instance, in this year, 2014-2015, annual performance plan, most of the targets that you commented on were just left out. No effort was made to determine, for instance, a SMART target relating to that same thing. The targets were just left out, which means that you can't find any of those targets. It's got nothing to do with the importance of the targets. They're still important, but you can't make findings on those targets. Now, do you look at that sort of thing, or is it, if they're not in there, there's nothing you can do about it? From one APD to next. The other question is about something very specific, and that's teacher training, initial teacher training. Teacher training at universities is nobody's responsibility. It's not the Department of Higher Education and Training's responsibility to produce teachers that can teach in the classroom, as I understand it. In fact, it's probably the Southern Council for Educators, which is now a separate entity. But nevertheless, so it's not the Department of Basic Education's responsibility either. Neither of them have got it as a target. No way does it appear as a target. It is crucial to, as you can understand, to the future of the study that our teachers can actually teach. I want to know very specifically about this target, but I'm sure that there are others that would bridge departments but wouldn't actually appear in either APP. How do you actually deal with that, with a performance measurement? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. So what am I done like? I have two questions.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Honourable Ndumi.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members and officials. On the presentation, it was very great and powerful. I'm hearing this for the second time. On the issue of this financial statement framework that is given by the Treasury, I believe that as a committee members, we should be knowing how it is planned, because we have to ask these people if they don't meet or they don't report according to the financial statement framework, and then we advise them as such so that they can improve on that thing. Is it possible for us to get that one from the auditors? The second issue is the issue of monitoring. You have spoken about the issues that we have to monitor. Do you have any monitoring instrument that we may have an example of it so that we can check? We can look at that, and we have one way of monitoring these departments. Financial statements can be cooked, and they can look beautiful. Look beautiful. Yeah, on paper. But the issue is on whether that particular thing that has been written down has it happened. Has effect to the quality of it. Did they comply? I think Honorable Albert has even said the building, the structure, are the people complying in accordance to what is supposed to be? Because we can have many schools built, and on paper money has been spent well, but the quality, service, and so forth, how do we do it? And you kept on saying smart. Simple, measurable, attainable. I don't know what they are. Well, how do you define them? I say realistic, pragmatic. Maybe you can say reliable. For me, it's realistic. You spoke about issues that you focus on the last audit, infrastructure, so, and then you quoted the NSNP. I think that is nutrition. On the paper position, when I looked at your report, you said, Department, you are telling us you are giving food to kids, but you don't tell us how many kids are given food on a daily basis, which is not done by school. I'm already correct on that one. I want to be reliable too. But the practicality of these issues, looking at the nature of the schools, the time, the 7 hours, man, must be practical or not. The time that we have, the type of human resource we have at the school. We don't have any human resource. We use the same teachers. You say they must keep a daily register. Who has eaten, who has not eaten. That means the teacher must not eat now. They must wait there in the line. They check whether this one has eaten, this one has thrown the food away. And so the practicality of that particular thing. It is practical for a teacher to do that. You see, now speaking of rich, many, many registers.
Can I defend the ages of this?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. If that is why from the department, they have to require. I'm not for them, okay, too much, but that is the requirement they put in, that's the information. So let's give that to the department to show how to do it, but for me, let me correct this office. They cannot get into it.
Yes, because they had no elections on the project, and I will talk about that one thing. I mean, I think those are the questions.
I don't think I can be able to pronounce the name, but I'll speak to the
name. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I've got three questions, or the first question already asked. The first one, thank you. What are the powers of Parliamentary Portfolio Committee insofar as audit reports are concerned, as opposed to National Assembly? And the second one, can audit reports be used legally to charge public servants that are guilty of financial management? Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other analysis or question? Okay, I'm sorry.
Thank you very much. Thank you, members, for these questions. And we'll try to the best of our ability to respond to these questions. Yes, it's correct. In September 2011, we at the Audit Office presented a table report in Parliament on the infrastructure for health and education. The findings they were presented and on the ground on September because we hear them and all the targets of infrastructure tables as of departments of all into account. And one of the findings, it is correct, as the honourable member said, related to spending the available money on infrastructure. If we build a school and we see a school, it is a question of saying, we accept it and leave it there that the school has been built. What is the cost of those questions that we as a body of people are concerned about? And there were lessons learned in that process. The cost of building a school in housing would differ to the cost of building a school in Eastern Cape in the rural areas, mainly as a result of economic reasons, and the ability of partners. A roads where the school is. You know, these are all effects that comes into play in determining the cost. And again, suppliers also is something that we notice that they take government for a ride. Once they notice that the demand or rather the supply is so low, they hide the prices. When the supply is excessive, the price comes down to the competitive. And again, these are the challenges that the sector is facing. But what we've seen the department is doing, the issue contracts of multiple schools for certain intermediate agents with a view that, you know, you can bargain for prices if you build in larger quantities, which is one of the issues that we see the department are taking. And some of these implementing agents as well have already contracted with certain suppliers. So when an implementing agent, which is not an organ of faith, negotiates price, the suppliers tend to be lenient as opposed to when the government itself is negotiating a price. With government, you know, you speak it or leave it type of situation. But because they don't want to lose business with these implementing agents and they supply them, they are the biggest buyer. So they tend to negotiate the prices. But again, yes, the challenge would be more again on the audit office. I can't tell you that if the school is sitting, that school should have been built for 2 million and not 10 million. It will need more than similar audit that was done on education and health to get to the recommendation. But maybe it might be something that perhaps we need to tell the audit office to look at that. It is a special project in the sense that if you look at the number of schools that are cities building and the manner in which infrastructure, the agency for infrastructure in the sector, maybe something that we need to look at and say, okay, now, because we see that the demand to build schools, let us make sure that we don't fall in the same trap of the findings that we have made when we presented the infrastructure report on education and health. But what I'm comfortable with is that National Department developed an action plan to try and address those root causes that are identified
and supported on that education and health infrastructure. And to the best of our ability, as and when they're spending your cash, we try to make sure that there are no similar findings. But to get to the determination of whether the cost is right and there is indeed very good money on what we're spending on infrastructure for schools, will not take a determination of that by simply to the regularity, will need a comprehensive performance on it to get to that. But I'm comfortable that there is an action plan that was developed, rolled out all provinces, Mobile Health and National Office, where the projects for building of schools are closely monitored by the leadership of Education at National Office. And we see that we may be building desired results, and if you look at the pace in which we are building schools, it is much more faster. We are not only building of schools, other infrastructures like water and sanitation, the certification of schools, we are getting some cares. Maybe we are not at the point where we should be because of other challenges. We are getting somewhere, but if there's a need to zoom into that audit, we can look at our capacity within the audit office and see to what extent we can respond to it. strategic plans not in line with the legislative requirements. What is it that can be done if that is identified? Firstly, we need to assess what legislative requirements were not met. It is an issue of the formulation of the performance indicator not in a way that they will be measurable, they don't make sense. You see, the challenge with non-compliance, you cannot undo non-compliance. With my statements, I can pass a general and say about the situation. If I'm non-compliant, I can't undo it. We don't do it non-compliant. But what we can do, if it's something that relates to the formulation of a performance indicator, we can go back to the department that's advised from the audit office to say, you will have a challenge, and that's something that we have done with the active audit of our annual performance plan to say, look at this and it's problematic. You need to correct it. But in correcting that, if it has been approved as a strategic plan or the annual performance plan, we need to follow the same approval process as the initial strategic plan or annual performance plan was done. So we say to them, this strategic plan and annual performance plan has been approved. These are the issues we are not compatible with. You will have challenges with reporting on when they decide to transfer it. Because as a audit office, we can't impose changes to be effected, but we can make recommendations, and it's up to the department to decide whether it is a recommendation or not. But in the end, they take recommendations, then we tell them follow the same approval process. But if you miss the timeline or it's something that cannot be adjusted, nothing can be done about it. All we need to do is to record it on our plan of action to make sure that the similar thing does not repeat the following year. So it depends on the extent of non-compliance and the matter at hand. A shifting of funds, whether the need to get the AGFA involved in our input on that. That doesn't happen very often. We, in most cases, tend to see the shifting of funds for the violence when we audit the appropriation statements and the interim financial statements are presented to us in September or the final financial statements are presented to us by the 1st of May. There is no legislative requirement that our entities, the departments, need to come to the Auditor General and request approval to shift funds because, again, as the Audit Office, while we are issuing added auditing services, we need to be independent of management. But when the departments and management comes to us and say, we have a problem, there is this priority now and we need to shift the funds. We can't say yes or no to it, but we can advise on the right processes to do it. The documentation that's required, making sure that that move is approved at the correct level of management. If this is something that needs to be approved by treasury or the executive authority, we will tell them that for that type of environment or that shifting of funds, that needs to be approved at this level of management, of this level of leadership, and this is have corroborating documentation that is required, and it will be up to them whether they do it or not. But in most cases, they don't come to us, they don't request our permission. The only time we see is when violence and shifting of funds are already taken place, but we then audit the process. But then it becomes auditing history. And if there's findings, we raise findings, say, hey, this is constitutes an authorized expenditure because ABC didn't happen. This is what normally happens. HSM mandate, mismanagement of funds. And whether people can be called to call up the can charge a fee for those that are transgressing. As a body office, we are accountable to Parliament, our stakeholders, but we cannot be criminal ourselves, but we can act as expert witnesses. If I audit it and there's questions to it, I can respond to the questions. We can present reports on special findings saying we audited this process and these are the reports that these were the transgressions, and we present the report to the executive authority. But as and when we audit findings and there's suggestions that there was maladministration or someone pocketed state money, and if we have concrete evidence, we'll raise it with the executive authority, the leadership of departments, and say, this is what we identified. Act on this. Take appropriate steps. And we will follow up to determine what has been done. And when we present audit outcomes, we will come to the committee and say, these were the audit outcomes. There was this item of fraud. There was this maladministration presented. This matter to the leadership, the executive authority, and this is the action they said they would take to address the situation. So that when you engage them, you can follow up and say, the auditor general indicated this, how far you are headed that. But what we don't have as the audit office are the power to prosecute every country. We don't have the power to open a criminal charge, a case, you know, children, so to demand, but we can bring it to people with relevant authority to do so and give them recommendations, upon them whether they take recommendations or not, but to make sure that we are being transparent, we have got to oversight for us like this community, this is what happened. You can follow up with them so it is clear that everyone will have it. And we do tell them that we will report to our office, to the parliament committees, that we have done it, so that they come and clarify themselves and declare up front that there was this issue. That's why in most cases when things go wrong, you will see the accounting officer report. They'll tell you up front that look, this is what went wrong and these are the steps that we are taking to raise or address the situation. But what is most important, let us not leave it there. Let us follow up. Accounting officer, you said this, how far? Because what happens to happen, they report on these things and they hire off and no one follows up with these things. Setting of targets, the smart criteria and targets that are being left out. What we do, and we saw that as a trend generally in government, you will have a 5-year rolling strategic plan with annual performance targets, saying every year over 5 years will be achieving this. You find that when you go maybe on a particular performance indicator, we have a target of achieving maybe 100. On year one, we achieve 50. On year two, you have 100 again. In fact, you don't have 100 because you still have a backlog of 50. The following year, you should have advised to be 150 because you haven't achieved the other 50. But what tends to happen, you find that performance indicators goes missing. And if you look at previous reports, you see that it was not achieved, then what happens to it? Do we forget about it? These are the issues that we bring to the department's attention to say, look, you couldn't have achieved it because there was a target for 5 years, the previous 2 years you haven't achieved, you were addressing that what happened to it. Sometimes it comes one of those things that are human error, clerical error, as and when we do things. We don't have the ability as a body of this to say it was intentional or not. But you can bring it to the attention and say you omitted it, bring it in. And if there's no intention or there's a change in priorities and you no longer want to profit with it, say it, put it in public open that this is no longer a priority and these are the reasons and what, how far we went and what is the impact of doing it. This is what we advise our entities to do. These are training. It's a challenging one. And it is correct that it is uncertain whose responsibility this is. And unfortunately, the only thing or the powers we don't have as a body office is to force these entities to put things in a strategic plan, because then what happens if they don't achieve them, it becomes one of those things that were imposed on them by the body office. But it is very important. I think the committee and the parliamentary structure are in a better position to raise these issues. We can't raise them as a body office to say, look, someone must take responsibility for this. But again, there has to be clear distinction. What are the responsibilities of the higher education and training on this, and what are the responsibilities of the there's no question, there's no doubt. These people, education are intended to set this the basic education sector. But again, the institutions that are offering the service are education and trade. Now, there must be coordination between the two ministries to address these issues. And it's something that perhaps at the audit office, we didn't pay too much attention to, and going forward, maybe something that we can enforce. And maybe indeed the leadership of basic education and say, we understand you don't provide training for these people, that is for you, and therefore they say need to be involved in the development and training of these educators. I give you assurance that this is something that we will raise with the leadership of basic education. However, when I presented the slide on the sector focus area of educator to continuous educator professional development, we tried looking at it, but it is a question we look at it because we saw it as what it is. If you look at the budget of education, education is spent almost consumes about 19.1% of government expenditure. It is a big spender in the country. And 80%, almost 80% of that budget goes to human resources. It is a thing. Now, it's not an area we cannot neglect. We need to look at our development of educators. We need to look at strengthening human capacity of educators. Perhaps it's something that going forward will extend our scope of work, but when we present the audit report, you will see the audit outcomes that we found on educator continuous professional development. But like I indicated, it was the first time we zoomed into that area, and it's an interesting area that I see going forward we'll do extensive work on it. Training on annual financial statements framework. Yes, we can do it. We can provide that training. It shouldn't be a challenge. We can just once treasury the framework, because almost every year what the treasury will do will look at the framework and because we are slowly moving from the cash basis of accounting towards the actual basis of accounting. Every year, there's introduction of certain things that need to be done in a different way, paving our way to actual basis of accounting. Once that has been issued by treasury, we can come as audit office and share our insight on the treasury framework so that we can ask the informative questions. When you interrogate a financial statement, you can build them with a certain level of understanding. We shouldn't be financial experts, but we need to be able to see when things are on the financial statement. We need to definitely as a committee to understand the reporting framework, and when things are wrong, we must pick them up, and we should be able to make recommendations to say they should be there, they should be there. Basic understanding of accounting framework for public entities and the department. The monitoring instruments that we have, yes, we can share that with you, but what we basically have, we don't propose to the department in what form, or we don't even give them a template to say this is what you need to be using. We tell them you can use it any form, but it must have the basic. And the basic is you need to indicate what binding is. And most importantly, the root cause, because when you address control deficiencies, you don't address the finding. If you ignore the root cause, the same binding will appear again next day. We say, what was the finding and what led to that finding? The root cause, the plan of action, how will you address the root cause? And by when it will be addressed. It doesn't have to issue an audit report in July and you put action plan and say you will address that root cause by end of March next year, because by then already deficiencies in the system of internal control would have existed, and by the 31st of March it's so late to address some root causes, and attending findings will be there. So as and when we raise audit findings, we don't even have to wait for the audit report. As I raise an audit finding, I tell management, look, that is critical. During interim audit, put it on your action plan and make sure that it doesn't recur again. That is being proactive towards addressing the control deficiencies that exist. A school nutrition program, the trash book for that, thank you for coming to our school. But in essence, from the audit office, we can only audit what management provides. If you say, I will do ABC, and you tell me, this is how I will report on that, I will audit exactly that and tell you whether you did it or not. Unfortunately, we can't impose things to management, and you can only audit what is embodied in the annual performance plan and the financial statement. If they don't say anything about it, and it's necessary to raise it, I will raise it with them and say, I'm concerned, look at this. But if you say you will do this and this is how I will do it, I will audit compliance on the basis of what you said. And I will say the finding thing.
this is what your framework said, and this is how you said you will report on it, and the board gave you time to on. And also, let us remember, JSAD issued an HIE of the SNKPI framework for managing program performance information. In the next IE, we have technical indicator descriptions. Those technical indicator descriptions define how information relating to performance indicators will be collected and reported. When we audit performance indicators, we audit them on the basis of that annexed IE. So we show you, we say, this is what you said you will do, and then we audit, execute it, and tell you whether you have achieved or not. Powers of parliamentary committees are opposed to that of the National Assembly. I do not want to inform the committee. I don't know how much power the parliamentary committee and other oversight structures have over the National Assembly, something that I would request our parliamentary office to research through your chair. But the information that we share from the audit office with the parliament, with the National Assembly, we start with all other structures before we even present to the National Assembly. So when we table the report to the National Assembly, probably all committees would be aware of that committee. So we make sure that everyone who is involved in the process is informed of what will be presented before the formal KP. Audit report like can be really used to charge those that transfer. I think I spoke partly for this, but just to emphasize the fact that we can only report to the heads of the departments and executive authorities and the legislators, portfolio committees, and it's upon you to take decisive action. As and when we raise these findings, we make recommendations on what we need to do. But whether you take the recommendation or not is another issue. But it is important that action that the leadership obligation says they will take on any matter that is of concern and that is reported to them is followed up.
You did. In your presentation, and we all know, you have to audit wherever the public manager has been issued. We've got the issue of private schools where they get a huge subsidy from the government. Where do they fit in there? What should they do? Really, because they have of a government manager. I don't think we will ever hear of what how they use it and what is your take when it comes to that. And also, looking at your report, yes, you look at the provinces that you expect, or starting from school up to the regional, because when you talk of implementation and policy, you take it down there. How do you build up on your report? Let me make an example. Once the honorable member has said, there's so much that is happening down there, and you only rely on the papers. Starting from the school level, the audit was happening made there. How do they build up to the report that is already coming to the additional level? How do we link these levels that we have for us to get the actual report that we are waiting for? What are the challenges out of it? You know, what are the roles that you are playing when it comes to that? I will also make a mention of the executive chair that the provinces get. Yes, from the national department, they will say this is what we've given so much to the provinces. You do audit the provinces at the same time. So how do you link? There's always a discussion as a committee. That's the way we get worried, you know. The national can say we've done 1, 2, and 3, and they've done it. But when it comes to the rest provinces, we don't get the value for money, and it could even affect the way the national the DPE is funding. So I just wonder how do we balance the two so that we look at our report, we know exactly what is it that we are looking at. I know there will be so much questions when it comes to this. I promise this won't be, and we will still be interacting with you, we'll still be asking this, but I think it's proper if we do understand that is why I'm just opening it for now.
No, thank you, Shay. You are correct, and this has been a only issue for the audit office as well. And it is unfortunate that at the moment we are still in the process of finalizing our education sector report. But the biggest challenge to what the Shay is saying is the issue of coordination within the concurrent function environment. That is the key issue, and the SET program is not only the basic education sector program, it's the issue of government, the way government is arranged.
where you have certain departments in the United Nations responsible for policy development and of which implementation of the objectives of government in education are the provinces. And there is this misalignment of the objectives and the manner in which equitable share can be used again. Because with equitable share, the controls are not as stringent as because with a dollar, there's a framework, you either do it or not, and you receive your money in terms of you don't provide a report such a thing that the money was used on internet, you don't get an exchange, and it becomes problematic. So you are forced to deliver on what we said money was used and on. With equitable share, some problems might decide to redirect funds elsewhere. So say, look, our priority here is not sanitation in schools, but it's roads. And money that is intended for probably sanitation is used for roads and we're not moving anywhere at the same time. That's how government is having some problems with the problem. But again, on our sector report, we are trying to address and we make sure that before the idea is to table it around the 13th of October, we'll request anything with the committee once we sign off on the sector report, we'll brief you on the sector report. The biggest challenge is coordination. And we should only need coordination within the basic education sector. Thing. The challenge we have within the sector with coordination, it depends on service delivery, and this is how it depends on service delivery. But again, the key focus areas that we identified, the ones I presented, are those that were more manageable from the audit perspective, given the resources that we have to create information at audit and produce a report that would make sense. And I fully agree again with you, Chair, on the issue of private schools. We have the schools that govern the operations of the schools and financial administration and in the schools act again, there is mention of that schools can appoint their own leaders. Now the challenge with this is that now you have two pieces of legislation, one saying the constitution that the AG can audit. But again, we as an AG have an inquiry that we might not have capacity to audit all those schools. If we audit schools, we're talking thousands of entities. But perhaps we can consider a great upon type of procedure. But one of the requirements to issue these schools with a contract that we receive from governments is by producing financial statements that are audited by the auditors. And on the presentation of this financial statement to the provincial department, and the department says we are happy that one that probably used for intended purpose and we give you this one. But again, I must admit to the committee that we as the Auditor General were never involved with the audit of schools except for the focus areas that we presented. But the difference between the audit of schools and those focus areas is that these funds for those focus areas are controlled either by national or provincial departments. They don't give money to the school to procure, except for in some cases, maybe in school nutrition, where maybe school might be giving money to procure nutritious meals for the learners, and the auditors will come and say, no, these funds were used for internet purposes. And again, it is not clear what the scope of those audits is, because the Act doesn't really define as much as the Public Audit Act defines what the auditor general will do when you perform it. And audit of an organ state. Perhaps maybe we just need to really look at the agreement, something that will enforce this auditor to critically look at the issues of financial administration at the schools, to make sure that when the auditors audit the schools, they zoom into certain things, and it doesn't become an issue of income and expenditure, whether you receive 100 cents and you account for 100 cents receipts, and everyone is able to say, what is money used for internet purposes, where any pieces of legislation that's what it should be adhered to and what they're compliant to that effect. But what we audit from the sector perspective, we are arranging the sector report from a coordination challenges perspective, talking to the six key focus areas. But going forward, perhaps is something that I will need to engage the leadership of education at national level now. That has led into the issue of schools. What is it in terms of the school sector? Because I did look at the school sector. It just says they can appoint their own auditors and before they receive their money, they need to be submitting audit report. But the challenge with that is we know some schools are not submitting audit reports that are not being accepted. But again, you cannot close the school because there was no audit report. That will be in charge to the learners. So they will still receive their money, but it's something that we need to tap in and make sure that we strengthen the controls around the area of financial administration at the school level. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, officials for AG.
law on social empowerment on the initiative of development that has been discussed. You know, we are here today to distribute the program for the third term. It's one of the topics that we are having a joint committee with higher education where we will be discussing the issue of teacher training and what is expected to be done. And again, we did have going to have this program with the AG's office on the 14th of September, so we're still going to get time to unlock some of the things that we couldn't do today. But otherwise, thank you very much. I think the whole presentation was an eye-opener, even if we move forward to engage whatever document that is kind of us, at least we know exactly what is it should be. Thank you ever so much. The time now. Honourable members, it's quarter to 12. We're going to have just stretch for 2 minutes while the department can ensure that we have a short presentation with the department in the agenda. Thank you so much. Just 2 minutes. Let's have a cup of coffee. You want to stretch for 2 minutes?
Thank you. I haven't read it, but I know that there is an apology that I cannot be with us.
I don't know whether the reasons have been stated, but I think the important issue that he has just apologized and should not be with us for this meeting. And I hope those apologies are noted and accepted. So let me hand over then to the leader of the delegation to meet us on this. Two leaders on this discussion on the on the set of what's given to school by the leaders of our system. Okay, I now hand over to Ms. Jobeba to lead us and introduce. Is there anyone who needs introduction to the team? Yes. Oh, okay. No, Ms. Jobeba, you can do that then. You can make sure that you thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for the invitation. You clearly know many of the people that will work with us. Ms. Samuel, the new face is Mr. Shabalala, who is a newly appointed, from Shenzhou Shabalala, a newly appointed, the newly appointed director for district planning and implementation support. Thank you very much, Chair. We are aware you've had a long meeting, so we'll try and go fast so that we can allow you time to engage and ask us questions. The structure of the presentation is as outlined today. I will not go through it, but to also say that what we've asked is that you also be given an annexure of the profile of the underperforming district, or districts performing under 20 and under 70 and the 20 of the week. The profiles that you see, we have similar profiles for all of the districts, but we thought we would give it to those who they had promised to send it through to the committee. Sorry about that. What we had done, realized when I sent the presentation through, we realized that we had not saved some of the things we should have saved. Okay, now we've got the right one. So you will see that when I present, there will be one or two, I mean, just one line actually that we changed, well, that we introduced. And this slide provides the context of the strength and focus on district. The honourable members will recall that in our previous organogram, there wasn't a dedicated focus on district. And we thought it was important to remind honourable members of the non-negotiables which would have been shared with you by the minister and by the department, which there are 10 of them. And these are non-negotiables, the non-negotiables entering our work as we go forward. And you will see that the issue of districts is a critical non-negotiable. And the minister has therefore increased focus and capacity on the issue of districts and our monitoring, support, and the improvement of performance in districts. However, all of those non-negotiables that you see there are also the bedrock of all of district work. Because if in a district where we're looking at issues of LCFM, where we're making sure that the infrastructure is fine, so all of the things that are identified here also form a key element or the key focus of the work of district. As you have just said also, the districts are seen as the perfect opportunity or perfect vehicle to improving quality of learning outcomes for all learners in the system. And given that the radically improving the quality of education is high on the agenda, they have been put very much at the center of work that we do as a department. We believe that they play a central role, and they are often the only vehicle that schools have for initiating, testing, and driving, and also sustaining systemic reforms. So we put them right at the center of our work. The NDP in the Vision 2030 sees the role of district as to provide targeted support to improve practices within schools. and also to ensure communication and information sharing between authorities and the school. So that's the context in which we work in. But continuing with that, just to say, in the past 5 years, since the Minister Mutaka came in, we have really worked through the district to make sure that all of their activities are increasingly focused on learning outcomes, and they are not just on administration. And that has been something that has been a focus. But some of the things that have been part of support that provided to districts so that they can perform their core responsibility, a major innovation has been 2-day working meetings. You see that I voted the working meetings because these are not just meetings between minister and district, but they've actually been working meetings over 2 days, which I held quarterly. And today we had 13 of these meetings, and these meetings focus on the core issues from the curriculum and curriculum coverage, from availability of LTSM and its utilization, all of the things that drive the system. And this structure has been able to monitor what districts are doing, to make sure that the communication is seamless. Normally we communicate through CM and HEDCOM, so this was the new innovation, to make sure that, because we picked up that the information didn't always go back to districts and schools, to make sure that that level has the information, knows what is expected, and that we're able to monitor. But also a key part of that has been the sharing of best practice. And we take what's happening in provinces and districts that seem to have gotten right, and we bring it to the meeting. We also establish a similar structure for all districts performing below the national average. This was for joint learning and monitoring, again, of key priorities. For the 10, this year, the focus is districts performing below 70%, because that's the target that we have put. I mean, that's the marker for underperformance. And we've got 20 of such districts who are below 70%, 18 in the Eastern Cape and 2 in Limpopo. But for the 10 in the Eastern Cape that perform below 65%, we've got presidential. Through this structure, we also introduced something called accountability meetings. The term accountability meeting actually came from the districts themselves, but it's where they get together to account for what they've done. And these accountability meetings they took the one with the minister and accountability meeting, but they cascaded down to provincial level. And the focus has shifted a lot from fully administrative to putting learning and teaching at the center. So all of the things that relate to that. And as the committee might know, the policy on the organization roles and responsibility of education district was diverted as policy on the 24th of February, 2018. The context for district operation has also improved in a way that would enable them to really provide targeted support to schools. We've got data on administration and learner performance. I mean, data on administration and learner performance is available in the system. We've got SSM that, even if it's not working optimally, it is beginning to take off in virtually all the districts. Our NSC information is available and annual national assessment. And through these processes, we're trying to push our districts to become data-driven, so that improvement and monitoring is based on data that is collected. And in this coming between 2014 and 2019, therefore, Chair, our support to districts to perform their functions at the highest level will be enhanced, and we will share with the committee some of the areas that we've identified. We thought, and we're not going through every single slide, because the slides are fairly similar, but what we have done is to then work with districts to look at how, in terms of performance, because we believe that performance should be at the center of what we do. We've looked at how we've done in performance, and we've taken mainly the NSC data, because it's the motion language. We plotted each district in each province. Eastern Cape has 23. We're working with that. What I would like to just highlight is that virtually in all of the provinces, and in all of the districts, we've seen a pattern, which is new. That you can see, I'll go to Free State, which is easier because they've got fewer districts, like what we're presenting is the same. You will see that, for instance, at KP in the blue line represents 2011, and 2012 is represented by the red, and 2013 by the green. Virtually in all of the districts, and if you look at what we have as well, you will see that even the undermost stressed and under-performing ones, which are below 20%, we can begin to see that the shift is upward. So even though they are not where we would want them to be, but you can see that it's improvement. So it doesn't matter which quarters you go to, you will see that the green is the one that, you know, that goes up. Some, like for instance, something of a slight drop, but the drop, where there has been a drop, is not very significant, but the gains that the system has made, you know, throughout. So if you go through all the provinces, I want to go to the Mpopo, for instance, which is one of your lower performing provinces. Again, even in the Mpopo, you will see that over the 3 years, with the support that's been given to districts and the work that the system is doing, you are beginning to see, and we use these in our meetings of accountability. In those meetings, we go beyond this. I will look at some of the quality ones that are in the face, but we look at every performance in every single subject that the provinces present. And you can see whether it's Northwest, it's not the Cape, Western Cape, with all of them, you can actually see the improvements over time. Okay, we then look at some of the quality issues, because as you are aware, in terms of the performance of the system, we've made sure that we move away from the percentage part, which is just about the quantity, to look at the quality. And you will have had such presentations when our colleagues from exam come in today. We then plot this in terms of bachelor passes. Now, in terms of bachelor passes, again, the green is the most recent, and the blue this time is 2011. Again, plotting it over 3 years, we can see where the pressure points are in Eastern Cape. For instance, Grahamstown has gone down, and Grahamstown is one of the districts that we mentioned now. So we use this information to say, where do we put our support, and what is it that we're dealing with? But again, the clearer ones are where we have fewer districts. You can actually see it much more clearly. But our information is distilled, fair, disaggregated, specific as well, so that we can look at the schools within a sector to provide support. So although we're talking districts, what we're looking at is district-specific schools. So our work looks at that level, so that we don't just look at the province. And again, Chair, all of them, I will go through quickly. You will again see that the green, which is your 2013, and can actually see throughout, and I still say, look also at Limpopo as one of our struggling districts. You can actually see the set going up, and that is what we're focusing on to increase the performance. Now, here, again, you can actually see even provinces that seem to have not captured to that. In terms of bachelors, if you look at Northern Cape, there are districts that their districts have not done so well in terms of consistent improvement, and therefore these are some of the things we're working with them on. It's shown to be true even when we work with schools. One district that we had focus on and not in Northern Cape is John Taulo. Mainly because John Taulo had been an underperformer throughout, and you can still see it's below the others. But also John Taulo is the one where the community has really made it at the heart for children to be in school, impossible with the road closures. So we worked with them very closely, and you can see much as they're still below the others, that one has been improving consistently. But clearly, we have over-focused and over-invested in John Taulo, and we might need again to look at what we could do with it. Western Cape as well, the improvement hasn't been that big, but overall not much to stress about. Here, this slide looks at mathematics performance. Chair, without delivering the point, again, to say, with all of the each indicator that we're looking at, you can actually see the improvement because those are the areas that we've been looking at. We've looked at bachelor passes, we've looked at percentage pass, overall percentage pass, we've looked at bachelor passes, we've looked at mathematics passes. Again, and here, because the members have the presentation, I will just, it's a show and tell without talking much on any of these. But again, Northern Cape shows itself, again, around the John Paulo, shows that, you know, we have been working with it and supporting it very closely. And you can see it's the old one that has a clear step-by-step upward trend. We're going to look at it. I mean, we are already, in fact, working with the Northern Cape quite closely to look at this. And then the Western Cape, again, this is information that's not just available to us, but it's available to the districts and the provinces to manage their work. And therefore, the Western Cape would know where to put pressure, where they, which districts don't seem to be moving upwards consistently. If I find clear, I will not go through it, but you know, flip through it just to show that the trend is, it remains the same, including, I just want to stop again to the, I didn't pause this Eastern Cape simply because I've already signaled that 18 of the 20 below 70% come from Eastern Cape, but in terms of upward trends, they are there. Limpopo is the other underperformer, and seeing the trend there, Northern Cape have already highlighted. But for the rest, you can actually see, even in physical science, the performance is steadily going up, and where it isn't, we're all working on those with the same information in our hands. When I started here, I then also said that the role of the district we've taken from our understanding, but also in line with the NDP vision. And the issue of targeted support is uppermost in our mind. I spoke about the data that we're collecting and the analysis that we do of performance. But what we've also done to strengthen district support, and this may have been reported a while back to the committee correct in the last administration, the profiling of districts that we were doing, which included profiling of every single school in every single district to try and understand, to have a profile of each school so that the support by centers and districts can be focused and can be targeted. We had identified, we have now done, we profiled just under 22,000 schools. We hope there's only one district that we had not, that we had just started in, that was Mississippi. Already the profiling is happening, and we're hoping that by the end of September we'll have profiled all of our schools, and we'll profile 80 out of the 81 districts. The key issues that we're looking at, we had our ICS coordinators go into every single school to look at issues of admission, which have looked at the things that keep coming up, beginning of the year, middle of the year, admissions, the issue of ACAS provisioning, whether it's your teachers or admin support for schools. LTSM curriculum, that is about LTSM availability and its utilization. Curriculum, it is about the curriculum offering, because as honorable members are showing a way sometimes to offer curricula that in fact they cannot support in terms of the staff confidence, sometimes it's too broad. So we look at those things. We look at the issue of academic preparation by staff as well as curriculum coverage. School management, and school governance, learner well-being, and infrastructure. Now, the data that has come out, which is quite voluminous, it provides very useful insights, both with respect to district operations, what districts, well, if it runs across, you can actually see that maybe it's something that a district as a whole, and not a particular sector, needs to attend to, as well as capacity and capability at district level, district and sector level, as well as school level operations and challenges. As I said, the profiling will be finalized by the 6th of September. What we've done here, and this is the other amendment you may see in the copies of presentation that you have, but we will give the updated version. When we profiled by the 31st of matter of May, we did the analysis. We're now going to continue with the profiling. We needed to stop and begin to share with HEDCOM and the district what was coming out of the profile and not wait until the end. Now, these were, we put up there the number of schools that had been profiled per province at the time, you will see when I begin to look at Ishi in Meging, I will not shift to the Western Cape, because at the time we had only focused on the Sati. We have now completed Western Cape, so in our next presentation, because we're doing the analysis, we will be able to lift the issues that are emerging. But here are some of the issues that are emerging from those that have been proposed. And we don't expect, to a large extent, we don't expect many of the things to change, because from our work and from what we've done now, infrastructure in the Eastern Cape, all of us know, is a major issue, and it just sticks out. And you see infrastructure anyway in the system does run across, but it is not, it differs in terms of the level of stress in the province. ASAP provisioning, again, confirming what we know, but the beauty of this is that it's not just confirming the things that we know. Because if disaggregated per school at the second, we're then able to plan for intervention. When the minister started with the profiling process, she said, what I want is that when you move from a second to the district, you must have addressed the issues that impact on that particular district. And this is what we hope this will help us do. Just because I don't want to repeat it with the other slide. For instance, with issues of infrastructure, here we haven't shown what infrastructure is about, who needs maintenance, or where the strength in terms of capacity of the school. But when you drill down to the schools, individual schools and second, then we've disaggregated it. We show where a school actually needs toilets, it needs additional classrooms, whatever. Some of it's windows that are broken down, and those we can deal with easily. So we've got different ways of dealing with it, but the information helps us do that. In terms of KwaZulu-Natal, in Eastern Cape, I said everything is, every province, the infrastructure, clearly we haven't had, you know, the success we should have had infrastructure, so it's under. But you will have realized that in Eastern Cape, the issue next to infrastructure or following infrastructure was teachers. In cases, and in general well-being. And what we are thinking is that the learner well-being being suggested here, that could be a result of issues around HIV and AIDS, and we're working to really dig deeper in that to understand what the issues are. In Limpopo, learner well-being, we looked at a whole range of issues. We looked at you know, often in the schools, children who come from childhood families. We looked at the absenteeism where children had to assist parents to go and get pensions and all of that, and that's what it was. And we looked all of those under well-being. But then the department is looking at strategies to deal with. So again, it's a range of things like school infrastructure. It's not one item, it's one particular thing. In Limpopo, is infrastructure and LPSM curriculum, although largely sorted out by the 6th of May, we still found that that's one of the issues that came up strongly. In Mpumalanga, now what we do, Chairperson, because you asked the question, we work with the districts and the provinces to try and understand from them what they understand to be the reason for the things that we're picking up. So that the strategies are not designed by the DDD alone, when in fact we might be addressing the wrong thing. Northern Cape, I wanted to raise that because our own, again, it is not informed by the detailed work that we're doing with the provinces now, but Lena will be also taking us second in Northern Cape, and we wondered whether that could be linked to the alcohol fetal syndrome, because we know the issue in, but you need to go down to actually understand it better. So that's the work we are currently going into, which I will speak to. So, suffice it to say, Chair, again, the issues of infrastructure arises are the major ones throughout, but it's not about a shortage of food necessarily, it is not about a shortage of toilets, only a whole range, and if the school level provides, then unpack it more. Chair, Chair, I'd like to then move over to focusing on district offices. We've looked at their performance, we've looked at trying to give them more information so as to what we have for them to really provide targeted and focused support to schools and sectors. And just to relate that, you see, this is the key driver, right? Our work with districts, because as we were profiling districts, we did tendency category profiling of and I say category because it wasn't in depth of district offices themselves, to look at, you know, the issues that face them as they try to support this. The one thing is that although we have the policy that was declared, or that was promulgated last year, there's still variation in both in terms of responsibility and authority of districts. And so not all districts are able to intervene with authority where they are, and that's a major limitation for some of the districts. And we found that there are vacancies in critical posts, in critical field worker posts, that some of them funded, but not filled. We also found that in a number of district entities, they didn't have the necessary tool of the trade to actually make it, to make them do what they're meant to do. A number of districts still operate with no functional centers or connectivity, you know, fax machines, those things that we consider basic. Links to those things that are basic, we believe even transport to actually visit the schools. Although a key thrust of ours in the next term, we'll also be looking at efficiencies, in line with what the Minister talks about, quality and efficiency, because with some of these, even in the Eastern Cape, they have SSM in some of the districts, which is effective, which could enable them to support and work with schools without always having to go. You know, I'm just saying we're looking at a range of methods. Major issue has been issues of performance management systems and accountability measures, very weak in a number of districts, as well as appointments at all levels of the system. We have, starting with your principals, but right up to district level, including critical posts like target advisory posts, because we believe you can't support learners if you haven't, teachers, if you're not appropriately qualified. We've also picked up critical skills gaps across the various levels of the system of the district, as well as the continuation of small and non-viable schools. As a result of something that we're seeing a lot of now, population migration, there's both out migration, a lot in some of the Eastern Cape schools, and in migration, which is not the thing I'm talking about here, but in migration to provinces like Western Cape and housing. Chair, based on the things we said, we've then looked at some key priority actions and focus areas that we start with. One, although everybody talks of the business as being a key lever, we really want to reinforce that push, because until we all recognize that as key, we don't think anything will happen. We talk of a radical transformation, we don't think there's any radical transformation in the system that can be possible until this layer of the system is strengthened to do the work that they need to do. We want to ensure alignment, and we see that we're talking of clearly defined norms, but we call them flexible. To accelerate the implementation. The reason why we move it flexibly on it is that we believe that unless we are aligned to provincial context and district context, we may want to enforce a policy that may not be workable in some, either because the record is such that the resources may not be immediately available. As we are looking at some prioritization within that, what is it that we prioritize? Some of the things that I've talked about, availability of staff in the critical areas, availability of tools of the trade, the delegations that will enable us to work, all of these are captured in the policy, and those would clearly be a priority. But linked to that, we can design an intervention plan that will enable us to know who we have. We've talked about looking at appointments, But unless we have a clear profile of all of the directors, the circuit managers, and curriculum advisors, it will remain something that we know and we pick up, but we won't have a proper database. That has been one of the areas that we prioritize that we starting work on. Secondly, modeling operations of an ideal district. Focus on providing support to students. The third area is developing criteria for the appointment of district directors, circuit managers, and subject advisors. Developing a sustainable capacity building model and programs, and establishing a credible monitoring and performance management system. So before I move, just to note that we have a very small team in the DBE, but we have been given the services for now of a team of 5 people by McKinsey who are working with us full time to try and assist us to make sure that the program gets off the ground and look at the kinds of capabilities we need. So some of them, 3 of them are full time with us in the department, and the senior officials are based in Joburg, but we meet weekly, but they're working very closely with Mr. Chavalan. I then looked at some of the expected activities in line with taking the forward, and I prioritized them in the way that we started working with them, filling off key vacancies. We've identified key vacancies and we're working with provinces to fill them in. I'm at key vacancies because our line goes right down to the school, although we're not, you know, dealing with school level issues, but we're looking at how the system is managed from the district, circuit, and school, where we've made real inroads within the filling of principal posts, which was a major area for us. We've already seen an improvement there, and we're looking at the other vacancies. Currently developing regulations on the implementation of the policy, which is a policy that was developed. We've already started and we're looking at by mid-December, we will have some norms that can be looked at. Because the process has started, we've got a draft, we've consulted internally. We're now taking it through the process to look at whether these draft regulations will be worth the regulations. We've looked at a minimum enabling resource package, because we are aware some of the things that I just mentioned is that some of the districts don't even have real district offices. But we know building district offices may take long. But we're saying minimally they must be connected. They must have printers and text machines. They must, you know, all of those basic things. So we've defined a minimum enabling resource package, and we're working to make sure that all districts and circuits have this. What we've also found is that sometimes you will have the printers but no paper or no ink. And those are all the issues that we're looking at to make sure that the services are able to work. We've also started, and you'll see that we've got a code there on where we are with some of the things. We are looking at the recruitment criteria for district officials. And we've got our timelines there. I've said we are profiling district staff, and here we're looking at both the we're looking at everybody there, you know, district directors, circuit managers, and subject advisors. And we're looking at a program for capacity building, or looking at the capabilities that I needed. Some of the work now, here my not being very computer literate shows with some of the things that but one area, for instance, that we've identified for an essential starting point at a development program for it is the issue of using data to plan and monitor performance. And we're doing it because we've got enough data, and in our working provinces we pick up that they have the data, but it's not being used for the purposes. So the data will be there, but it will not be used as expected. Chair, I believe we covered all, and as we said, we have speculated also the kind of profiling to date that we have on each district. I've looked at the performance issues, but in the underperforming, underperforming districts that you have, you will see that for each district, we have a profile that will show the number of learners that the number of UN things that I didn't put in here, which are about the ANA performance. Thank you very much, Ms. Mahagari. I wasn't going to Google because I'm not good at finding the things when they're not located together. But that would be Butterworth, for instance, and you will see that if you look at it, we have from the contact detail of the district director, but at least it gives you present it, because I was meant to send it for the colleague whose constituencies these are, and I wanted to give an example of what we have. So if you need more, we've got for all of them, but that's how they are the package. So we just wanted you to see what we have, and we want basic data indicators so you're able to know how to contact, who to contact, and if you go, you know the number of schools, the number of learners. But what's important, we also have, ANA performance and, NFC performance. So all of the basic data that you need. Here is, you got your, if you look at schools, we have learners by grade, you've got, so you've got the district at a glance on all of the critical indicators. Okay, can I also say if there are any indicators that for some reason you think we should have put in, which we haven't put in, we're quite happy to hear of those as well so that we can continue to improve what we have, but we improve our own ability to assist and work with the district as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Before I even open up, last week in KZN I was called by various stakeholders on the issues of district, and I was happy that you are going to have this interaction today. I will try to example. In Pinecone district, the issues of subject advisors. I know it's a common problem, but let me be specific. You find that you don't visit to schools, they are just treated in the office, and they told me blankly that we are not going out of these offices. We don't have resources, we don't have car allowances. Then you begin to say, why are they there? What value are they adding? And I'm telling you, they are just sitting now. Nothing is happening, just because they don't have resources. And they will ask you a question, what are we going to use to go to those schools? I don't have an answer. I'll cite another example. Again, around the Makumudo area, there was instability for 3 days, there was no schooling taking place. The main challenge was, we don't need the subject advisor because they don't do anything, we don't know what is going. That is why we have been to oversight in various provinces, even Cape, we met the same challenge. Go to all over, when it comes to the performance of the district officers, the main challenge is that area of subject advisor, and it's a reality. We don't see the impact. So I would have loved to really, if ever, in whatever way you try to enhance that level, you pay specific attention to those. But I think the main question that I have, it's part of the truth change that you have been talking about. What is their argument when they are being employed, on how are they going to function? Because I think it's a common challenge throughout the country to say, what is their expectation, what is it? How are they expected to perform their duties? Because in whatever way, whoever is in that office, no one is expected to be seated and waiting for the school to come to them. But we need to see them moving out, assisting the school, getting information. But how is it designed for them? Not even only the subject advisors, even on the chief officials, we can't expect them to be seated in those offices that we expect it to be done. So what is your take when it comes to that? Honorable members, because we are rushing time, can I just allow everyone to have a take if ever you do have one to ask a question on that one? And I won't get into that much, but be mindful of time. Honorable Basson, Honorable Boshoff, Honorable Laumo, Honorable Kola, and Honorable Mugu in that order, please. Oh,
Fine, you should be the last one. Thank you, in that order. Thank you, Chairperson. You have already answered my first question of availability of resources, because if you look at performance, you must avail the resources in all spheres, as the Chairperson has mentioned. And also, I always travel to business at home on Downhill, JTG. With all the challenges that we know in that region and that district, and the bad performance that has been portrayed on the screen there, what support do you give those learners, as I have learned that they are going to write exams, the final exams? I always get, Miss Violetta, saying Eastern Cape, 18 out of 20 underperforming schools. Now, looking at the balance of forces there, district, is Eastern Cape not overlooked, people? I know that it's not yours. How do we relook at that? Because one of the problems, as well as the chairperson has told us last week, is the hotspot within Eastern Cape, as we are on their way, on our way there. I noticed that on this information hard copy for district profiles, you supplied us with the Bongos district only. Do you have electronically for us, or is it sent? It's off the game. And that made an ICT with a BBT.
Thank you very much, Honorable Vashon. I would just like to know, if you've ever looked at these emerging issues with regard to the district, in Mpumalanga, where I come from, is there a reason why you only concentrated on Bosabelo and Chabangi? Because there are four districts. Are those figures available for us of the other two districts? And I suppose the other provinces have the same question. And then just another question with regards to the current progress of your key focused areas. I'm rather worried. There are many grey areas. You say you have not started yet, and it should be finished by November and sometimes in March next year. If you haven't started yet and you want to be finished by November, I think we've been a little bit optimistic. If we could just have a look at that as well. And by end of October. Thank you.
Thank you. Another question?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you. Chair, I want to start with the issue of the district playing a key role. Based on the situation that is now, I am not convinced. I had the privilege, I was taking the chair earlier, of attending a conference last week at which many principals were present, principals of good schools, principals of not so good schools, rural, urban, etc. Not one single one of them supports the district office. Not one single one of them. Some of them said their district offices are excellent, but those people should be in school teaching. There's no need for a district office. So I'm not convinced of the key role of district officers, but perhaps it's because of the performance. And I'd like to just understand why provinces are actually, and I'm excluding the Western Cape now, because I know that their districts are actually operating very well, but why, by and large, provinces are not taking districts seriously. They're not equipping them properly with people, they're not giving them resources to operate. Provinces are...
No, it's my opinion. But, you know, no, just the fact that there is a policy. There were guidelines on district operation, and there's now policy which was created last year on district operation. Now you're finding it necessary to implement norms and standards to try and hasten the implementation of the policy. Norms and standards are not binding. So you might find you have to put in regulations in place. But I mean, why, if districts are key to delivery of education, why are provinces not actually doing the job? Because it's just amazing that DBE should have to go and do profiling of schools. The district should know every last detail of the schools that they are serving. But okay, my question is basically provinces, and provinces, many provinces are not taking their districts seriously. And you are now having to enforce that, but why? What is your view on that? Just in terms of then the mentors for underperforming districts, I noticed that Grahamstown, for instance, is one, and I'm sure that there are many others in Eastern Cape. Who are mentors? Where are these mentors coming from? We all have some experiences to what the chair had. I went and visited 5 schools in my constituency yesterday. Not one of the schools has received the ANA results. Not one of them. They said, oh, yeah, we were low on the list. We were all called to the district office. We were shown a list of schools, and we were low on the list, and so we got into trouble, but they never, ever received an ANA report. So they've never worked, so obviously with the next ANA exam. I mean, there are so many problems in the district. Anyway, it really bothers me that the districts are not functional. I'm not seeing in here something that's going to result in provincial political will to make the district functional, because that's really what it is. I am concerned, and this is the last question, I'm concerned, Chair, in terms of measurements. For example, if you take an average, and let's use Grahamstown as an example. If you take an average across the district, Grahamstown has schools like Victoria Girls High School, like PJ Billerfield, like Graham College, really well-performing schools, which means that if it ends up with an average of 60% performance, then the other schools are dragging it down seriously, really, really bad. If you go to statutory questions, and if ending up at 60%, most of them are around about there. And so the average doesn't tell the true story of the really, really bad schools. Just on what you've, the measurements on what you've given here, I mean, if you just look at the learner-educator ratio, and the one is more funny, learner-educator ratio is 31, learner-classroom ratio is 44. So, but that's impossible. So therefore the learner-educator ratio is actually 44. Can't be 31. Can't be 31. In fact, it's probably more than 44. But okay, Chair, thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. You know, the issue of district was and is still a powerful idea, which was bringing offices closer to the people. But what we can speak about is these duties that are supposed to be done by the district officials there. You see, most of them, the officials, they are a flop. There are these officials inside there who cannot do their jobs because there's less monitoring or no monitoring at all. So even if you go to a particular edge of a particular department, let me make an example, an HR or a supervisor, maybe in the patient or whatever, you cannot find information that is convincing. So the whole system then collapses. I'll just make an example. You go to the district director, he is or she is no help or assistance. You see, you tell him, she will refer you, go to somebody, and why they are asking the head of the institution, the person. So the person cannot make follow-ups. And the person is afraid of everyone in there, afraid of the union. I mean, he or she does not know what should be done by him or her. That's why the district, you see, there's a problem. In terms of health insurers, district A are some of the district, well, let me say, they have what they challenge. You will find secrets asking stationaries from the schools around, while I'm meant to understand that secrets have what they budget from the district. And somebody is not doing his own job. So my comment on this, is it possible? how can we do it that the circuits are fully equipped and they control their own budget from the district, what districts they are failing them. The issue of CIs, Shepherdson has said a lot. The appointments, no, they are not fine. It looks like this portfolio is used as a dumping site. A dumping site. We take investment there to control image, while it did only this is quality or whatever. Cannot assist the teachers in one way or the other. Such that when it comes to monitoring of school opening and other stuff, you will find that the CIs are used just to go and check whether schools have been open or not doing their proper job of helping the curriculum. And on the issue of the district, now what district they are used as dumping sites. When a person has failed down there, they will take a person of begging about to be a person of be a head of human resource or a physical resource. That person does not know to he fails in the school, how can he control the entire district? So if we can be looking at those two, that we fully say this the second, and then we help the officials to monitor those who are working under them.
Thank you. Another question? We are only left with 10 minutes.
Thank you, Chair. You know, one becomes happy when you say there are things called non-negotiables. It impresses somebody. But what I want to check with you, it's on infrastructure. You don't mention a plan of maintenance. Do you have factor times in schools? We used to have such. It's like when a desk is broken, you know what happens to it? They throw it away. Okay. Why are you supposed to go out to work also that day? It be able to be used. Second, Chairperson, you know, from that other presentation, you said something that I did not know, that private schools are being funded by government. It's really, I don't know if we fund them, but do we check what is happening to them? Most of them do not have teachers, qualified teachers, and they are being changed day by day. All right. New teachers, do they just get anybody? Most especially if one is an earlier taken.
Then we will have another question.
Thank you very much. But it's like I'm just saying it after the question. I never knew that they are part of us. I only took them that private as they are. But let's just say that one. We spoke of infrastructure. Then the plan is okay, but I did not get your time frames on your deliverables as to when is it, when you say we're going to 2, 1, 2, 3, when can we say, when you come back, what to check as to how far are you, have managed to do 1, 2, 3 and the like. More especially with this district where Honorable Mugu is saying it becomes a dumping site. It's like most subject advisors are those that have failed in schools. If they are no longer wanted, they are taken there to be subject advisors. It's not right, because one other thing that makes them not go there, as the chairperson was saying, is incapacity. Some of them do not have capacity. They don't know what to say to the teachers, because some teachers know better than the person who's coming to advise me. So it becomes a problem. So we need to try and change this thing and do better. Lastly, what do you intend to improve the quality of support that you are talking about? How do you want to improve it? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I'll be very brief because some issues were raised. Chairperson, through you, I'm very happy to see the issue about developing criteria for the appointment of district directors, circuit managers, and subject advisors. I thought there was something in place. I'll tell you why. I see where we've taken people who study theology, become a marriage counselor, to be a circuit manager in Bembe, for example. Now, that might be a good circuit from time to time, but there are other issues there. My concern is this. When you apply for that job, can you actually appoint a circuit manager or any of that positions who are actually a director of other, let's call it, private schools? I mean, how can you work in the education department and be the director of things like that, you know, some an independent school, not a private school, it's the same thing, independent school or a business enterprise, like a learning academy. I find it very strange. So I hope that when we look at criteria for appointment, that there are very strict rules on that as well. You can't have another employment or such type of, it can't be conflicting, but it can be conflicting as well.
Thank you very much for all the questions. I start with some of the ones that you raised and accept that the issues that you raised are the issues that we really want to focus on. Because it is true that we've got, in the various provinces, to different degrees, project advisors who are really more office-based because of a lack of resources, and that's why we prioritize the area. What I didn't put in here, and I think Mr. Shalala probably noticed this, which we should have, we are on a roadshow, well, it's not a roadshow because we're trying to communicate anything, but it's not to mobilize, but to get people to act on these issues. And we believe that if we don't know what the issues are, we can't push them in a particular direction. We have been asked by the CEM Lekota to prioritize Eastern Cape and Limpopo, but we've got, you know, dates for all of the provinces. The issues we're looking at, the first one is the provision of, or the filling of the critical agencies. It is the provision of the enabling resource package that we're talking about, with timelines. Because when you deal with them outside of their province, and you don't have a CFO, the head of department, and dealing just with the district directors and the activities, the issues don't get resolved. So it's a major issue that we've been asked to deal with, and we are with, and can report. I think our last visit is the end of October, the last province which is the Western Cape, beginning of November. But we've got dates, and the issues are the ones we're talking about, but critical is saying you can't have people there, and they don't go out and work. What the reason we've been given to date about is not paying their SMEs, so that the understanding, Chairperson, as you say, was that they would be enabled to do the work, and then they get and they find that they don't have the resources, so the understanding is there. But the reason we're always given is the issue of budget. For instance, I know that KZN is facing budgetary problems, Limpopo requires in thinking, but he's saying this is a critical lever, you can't not resolve them, how is it going to do that? So it also links with reprioritization. We will be able to report once we've done that what we're finding and probably ask for assistance as well in terms of oversight, including by the NCOP, because once the decisions are made, they must be implemented. Chair, we will also pay particular attention to issue of project advisors. The Minister has raised this very strongly. We decided, although we're made to be responsible for districts, we defined it probably from the beginning, and we said it will go to second, and project advisors will have part of the district staff. So we will prioritize that, and the Minister, as I'm saying, has been very strong on that. Those are the people who have to support schools and support learning. And we prioritize the project advisors and second managers, even above the level before. Honourable Bashon, you raised this, the issue of availability of resources, you confirmed. The issue of JPG, we've been working with them on learner camps. We'll continue to try and support JPG, and they have really been working very closely with us. Where we sometimes get a problem is when parents withhold their own children. These are their children. You can set up the camps, you can make the necessary arrangements, but unless parents release their children, so again, it becomes a challenge. But we work closely with EPG. We've got a special team that's been assigned, led by Mrs. Paul Sadler from the Minister's Office. They are working very closely with the team to protect the gains that we believe have been made out of in the Eastern Cape. You asked the question of the Eastern Cape because the chairperson and everybody always talks about the Eastern Cape being challenged, and indeed the underperformance is really stuck in the Eastern Cape. One of the things we're looking at as we go on our provincial meetings, where we're meeting with the heads, with the senior level members, is also looking at the size of this. We're not convinced that Eastern Cape is necessarily overloaded, but perhaps not structured in the way that it should be. You find, and the issue that you talk about of the non-binding schools, you find them most at, in the Eastern Cape. You've got schools that should not be there, but there is no action that's happening. I could have talked about some of the things that we found out in relation to Eastern Cape, just also and slowness in acting. They will decide that this school and that school need pledge, and you don't need additional resources. This one is there. That's what it is, and it doesn't happen, and it will take years. So we've been trying to, we're working on that in a much more focused way. The other thing with the Eastern Cape is that the districts are then divided also on the number of schools, but many of their schools are actually out of policy, not aligned with policy. They have different, typology of school in the Eastern Cape, which by policy should not exist. We have primary schools and secondary schools. They still have lower primary, senior primary, and actually working with the province now and the district so that if we need to set up a team to assist them to do it, that's an area that's not easy. But in terms of the underperforming districts, what we've sent out is all of that. You got a few. All of those, we've got the names of all the districts and we've sent you the profile. If you haven't received anything or if you want to direct, please let us know. We'll send them through the web. But all of those that you put up is what you sent up. In terms, honorable bosses, in terms of who we focus on, why not all, we started with the EU, because we were also feeding into the NCT culture, but we're not profiles off. The only limitation in sending you all of that information now is that when we get it, it is very raw because it is textbook. And we then have to try and consolidate it so that it's legal, but we're able to, and what we then do, there's also a step in between when we go back to say, this is who in your second, this is what we found. Can you confirm we were with you in the profiling? This is how the school presents. So there's cleaning up of the data that happens, but we've done every single one of the ones. Like I said, the only district now that hasn't been concluded by end of last week was the CCT. We're working on. So we will make that available. Honorable Lovemore, we still believe, despite the view of districts, that they are a key lever. I think it was Honorable Lovemore who talked about the role that they were a village to play and the role that it did they played. I was in the elected office and I was in the district, and I know when a district runs well, what impact it makes. And therefore, we still want to do this. We've identified some of the reasons why things went wrong, whether it's the dumping of people or criteria that is not stringent enough and is not enforced. And therefore, that's why we're looking also at the monitoring. The criteria are one thing that we must make sure that they are applied. There are indeed some criteria that we keep, but they were very generic. In this day and this point in our system, we know where we were to let, where we took things for granted. And those are the things that we're looking at to make sure that they're high. What we haven't put in here is an area that we also prioritize, looking at competency assessments. We didn't want to raise it because it took a bit too long with the principals, because that has to be negotiated. But that's why we are not negotiating, because the district directors are not part of the negotiation. So that's actually just working on it with them. and as well as making sure that the performance agreement that district directors sign every year are very tight and aligned with that elements of those performance agreements that are generic and agreed to that we will monitor district for. So that is another layer to this, but the criteria are the very generic ones. You asked about and just to say, Honourable Lovemore, indeed we, and I think it also between us because we had first been asked to develop norms and standards, but in fact we're looking at regulations for implementation because we know that regulations are more enforceable, and we will fill up that part of our, and we take the point also about some of our time frames may be too ambitious, but we really the method is up, and some of the work we started already. The mentors have been drawn at the moment. We have been mentors, retired district directors from housing with a history of good performance. Because we were kick-starting the process, we wanted people who were nearby for us to confer, to debrief, to do that, and it's working extremely well. We're picking up issues that will also feed into the broader system, but they've got a proven track record, and they're currently retired, and those are the people we need. Some of the things that we do want to look at in the way that we work, it is really distracting to hear that there are schools that did not have received the ANA results, because the expectation on how to utilize the ANA results presupposes that you would also, well, in any case, have done your own analysis at school level, and that the second will have done theirs with respect to the second and the district. So in focusing the work of districts and sectors, this is one area that for us is important, because we say that's part of the data that you've got to use. And it links to the issue also that you're raising. The updates don't work on their own. They give us a picture. Our information is disaggregated to schools. And the strategy, and that is why when we work particularly with the underperforming, Greta would have been part of it. With the minister meeting, we have to now, up there, we've been focusing on district directors only. But with the underperforming, it's district directors and their second managers. So we work with them together so that the second managers know exactly what is expected, and it's unacceptable that any school should not have received the underperforming. So that's something that goes with it. The reason why we have an average, a learner educator ratio that's different from a learner classroom ratio is because we know that people normally do the sums of how many teachers are in the system and how many learners are in the system. When in fact, if you come to the actual implementation of the wait times, where it happens, it depends on the classrooms that are available. And then so we do that as well. But we also attract that, again, like your point about performance. It is an average. It's just a particular effect. And then you will still find the schools that have more than 100 learners for you, difficult to work. But the profile then tell us that way so that you know how to deal with it. Or that you have a plan. Honourable, I think some of you of your points then related to the wrong appointments and things that we then need to do with that. The inappropriate appointments and strengthening the sector. So we truly agree with the points that you made. In terms of infrastructure, the work that we're looking at in infrastructure, it is the implementation of the maintenance policy as well as the bigger issues around infrastructure. And that's why we're saying, again, working with the profiles, you will see which areas that call for maintenance, regular maintenance. The issue that you raised about support, it is still a really big problem in the system. We, right now, I think Eastern Cape is at 87 to 15 in terms of their issue of professional versus non-professionals, I think, kind of correction. But the guidance in the system is supposed to be, we started with 80-20 and then 85-15, but most provinces aren't getting it right, so they don't have enough money to actually look at that. We're looking at new ways of, or creative ways of addressing this through the MCT. Right now, we in the districts that are part of the MCT, we're looking at interns working with HPPTP, as level that we can provide the necessary support. It's not a permanent solution. Our HR colleagues are looking at how to deal with it in a systemic way, but we are looking at providing the necessary elements. Because many of our principals can do the work that is necessary before that. They are receptionists, they are whatever, they are everything, and they admin, and they don't have support. The time frames I've already said, honorable, because I mean, we certainly will look at because we, you know, in a large looking at that, although most of the work has started, and with the support, I've never, and in fact, I'm in awe of McKinsey. I've never seen people who the team that we have, whether it's a Saturday or a Sunday, whether it's 7 in the evening, for them, work is work. They don't say, well, when they come back on Monday, we will do it. That has been, it's been good for us. But also to model ways of working for us as a team. On another one of us, I can only say we very, you know, I mean, these things will still come back to you to look at whether our criteria are stringent enough. At this point, I'm unable to answer whether, in fact, we would bar district directors through the appointment from serving as director on the board, because maybe they add value when they're on the board. But, you know, I don't want to speak prematurely on the issue. I think we look at them as the developer.
Thank you.
I think you're better with your person. I hope I've answered all the questions.
Yeah, you did. But what I always say with the department, sometimes within the games, the visions that you have, the way you communicate them out to them is a challenge. You know, I'm taking that from what Honorable Lamont has just said now. You know, Western Cape can communicate what they are doing, you know, and Lamont, maybe I just need to hear that. Even people like Lamont, you know, they want to make sure that Western Cape is always there on the go. What I'm saying, it's not wrong, but even with the department itself, there are so many things that are good that the department is doing, but the way it is not communicated out there to the community might be in any province, you know. I mean, the department is there for all the provinces, but I think we are still lacking. Even this program to enhance the justice, you know. Those are the things that our people need to do, but maybe I'm opening it up to us as members, public representatives, to say these are such statements that we need to do, make out there in the house, so that people can know that the department is doing so much. When you say education is an eighth priority, indeed, there are so many steps that have been taken to ensure that education is out there. Again, if you have a speech, I'm not mistaken, falls under your own. Or it's not there. Okay, because I was going to say that one other thing where we want to look at the effectiveness of this district, what are we making out of education? That was one of the good instruments that we have, where we have to mobilize the community to watch, understanding what is happening in education. But again, I have to say this, we don't see much coming out of that. And maybe it's one of the presentations that we still need to address with the president to say, why are we failing to do that? Why is it? Is there a need for it? But otherwise, when it comes to the issue of the effectiveness of the district, whether we still need them, really, basically, I also believe we need that level of in our system. But I'm happy if ever you are having this right and making sure that you enhance it so that you can see it effectiveness, you can see its contribution. And as I said when I was opening, that was one of the levels that has been very weak in the system. Very much needed, but very weak. And I'm happy that you have accepted that. That is why we are taking that up. And we couldn't believe that next time you meet, you should have done the profiling of all the district that we have in the country. Then we can have a clearer picture of where are we and how are we moving forward to make sure that as we proceed next year, but we see great changes when it comes to that. Otherwise, I know we don't have much time yet. Thank you very much, Honorable Members, for being so attentive up until this far. You just have to rush and get water. The bells were ringing, that's it's quarter past one already. I'm sorry for that. Thank you very much, Mr. Rivera and your delegation. We are going to finish that show. The meeting is adjourned. These boxes were given by, is it Catholic? Yeah, Catholic Planning Officer. You said what information that you want us to read to the German contract that you have done or on the show, just for you to them.
Mm-hmm.